Good morning. It is 9:05 a.m. We are here today, December 20, 2021, in the OPA hearing room, Suite 907 of the DNA building in Hagania, Guam, for the formal hearing of OPAPA 21-007 G4S Security Systems Guam, Inc. versus the Department of Education. Presiding over the hearing today is Public Auditor Benjamin J. F. Cruz. For the record, also present from the Office of Public Accountability is Jarek Hernandez. Will appellant G4S please identify themselves and any institutional representatives present for the record?
Good morning, Your Honor. My name is Genevieve Rapatis on behalf of G4S, the appellant. Present with me is Eric Roberto from G4S. This is our institutional representative.
Thank you. Will purchasing agency DOE please identify themselves and any institutional representatives present for the record?
Good morning, Your Honor. Good morning, everybody. James Stake for GDOE, and with me is Carmen Charpres and Vincella Cruz for GDOE as well.
Thank you. Will interested party Pacific Data Systems, Inc. please identify themselves and any institutional representatives present for the record?
Good morning, Mr. Public Auditor. I'm Joshua Walsh for Pacific Data Systems this morning. We do not have an institutional representative in the room, but one may zoom in later if we can arrange that. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Will interested party Technologies for Tomorrow, Inc. please identify themselves and any institutional representatives present for the record?
Good morning. My name is R. Marcel Johnson on behalf of Technologies for Tomorrow, Inc. We do not have an institutional representative present, but likewise with Mr. Walsh, if we can arrange for them to zoom in, they would be interested in zooming in.
Thank you. You may proceed.
On the issue of the zooming, I discussed it with Jarek last week. I thought maybe we wouldn't have it on Zoom because I didn't want any witnesses, prospective witnesses, listening in on it, but if they're not going to be testifying, and if they're not going to be sharing screen or the, we can control the login anyway, can't we? If they're not going to be witnesses, I suppose we could.
Thank you, Your Honor. We have no objection to starting, just maybe perhaps at the first break, if that we could get a Zoom link or something just for non-testifying folks from our company. But I think we're prepared to be in, Your Honor.
Okay. Anything, Mr.
No, that works. Our institutional rep, if we're allowed to present him as a witness, would like to testify, but he can be present just to testify. That works with you.
Please. And I know that there was a motion filed for your participation in limine. I read it and I denied it.
Okay, thank you.
I feel I need to know as much as possible about what happened here, and so I'll deny the motion.
Understood.
Your case, Ms. Podge.
Thank you, Mr. O'Keefe. Just as a matter of housekeeping, we've already talked about the motion in the main. I believe that G4S still has a motion for summary judgment that's pending. I was not present at the last hearing, but my understanding was that it was still under advisement.
Yeah, we'll deny that.
Okay. Thank you, Your Honor. And then as to exhibits, to streamline this process, I believe all the parties agreed that we would just have all of the exhibits that have been submitted before the OPA could be admitted into the record.
Okay.
Okay. And then in terms of the order, we also agreed that we the order would be G4S, GDOE, PDS, and TFT. And we would not call each other's witnesses again. We would just handle all of the questioning whenever that witness was first called.
Please.
Yes. Okay, thank you, Your Honor. So I will go ahead and begin. And
you can have an opening statement.
Yes, I was gonna ask.
Please.
Okay, perfect. Your Honor, I think the trial briefs are pretty comprehensive, and the OPA understands what the issues are on the table. There really aren't that many. In fact, I think it's a singular issue, although there may be minor issues involved. But the appeal at issue here by GDOE, or I'm sorry, G4S, involves the procurement by the Guam Department of Education of services for the expansion of its wireless local area network infrastructure for all 40 public schools on the island. Guam's 26 elementary schools, 8 middle schools, and 6 high schools that serve roughly over 30,000 students and 4,000 employees. Your Honor, I went to GDOE's website the other day, and it specifically states, through the proper management of resources, continued improvement of programs and offerings, and dedication to excellence in education, the department has helped thousands of students graduate and enter the world of work or higher education. This procurement at issue is integral to ensuring that GDOE meet that mission statement in light of the rapidly changing nature of access to information and the prevalence of internet resources in classrooms now. The issues have been framed by the parties in different ways. However, ultimately, G4S's appeal of GDOE's denial of its protests asks the simple question of whether GDOE improperly evaluated and awarded IFP 2621 to a bidder who was not and is still not licensed under the Guam Contractors License Law. And it's our position that the resolution of this appeal is actually quite simple. The evidence, including testimony that we'll present, will show that licenses from the Contractors License Board, specifically a C-68 specialty license, is required to perform the work under the IFP. Guam's Contractors License Law prohibits unlicensed persons from performing or even offering to perform work for which a license is required. And it necessarily follows that because TFT did not and still does not have the necessary licenses, it was in violation of the law when it submitted its bid and will violate the law if contracting with GDOE. GDOE therefore should have considered TFT a non-responsible bidder and rejected its bid. Now, with respect to the arguments that we'll hear, Your Honor, by GDOE, and which we've heard before in the prior motion for summary judgment, there are two primary arguments that they raise. The first is the terms and conditions. And this argument, they say, supports its denial of G4S's protest because the terms and conditions of the IFB do not require the submission of a contractor's license. And therefore, GDOE could not have and should not have evaluated the bidders based on whether it was licensed to perform the work called for by GDOE under the bid, under the IFB. Specifically, in its September 3rd denial, it says, in this case, the IFB and its public terms and conditions did not require the submission of a Guam contractor's license in the bid submission. In addition, Amendment Number 4 did not require bidders to submit a Guam contractor's license with their bid submission. Therefore, pursuant to the Guam procurement law, GDOE properly evaluated and awarded in accordance with the terms and conditions set forth in the IFB. And GDOE, which I will present evidence on and which I submit, is incorrect for the reasons set forth in our hearing brief. But I want to identify specific provisions in the IFB that require a bidder to be licensed to perform the work under the IFB. Section 3.2.5, special permits and licenses. Section 4.3, cause to be observed. Section 4.4, license to conduct business on Guam. The sample contract, Section 19, compliance with the law. Section 25, disclosure. Amendment Number 4 that specifically addressed a question by PDS with respect to C-68 specialty licensed by the CLB. And we submit that GDOE further misses a key point. G4S's July 29 protest was on the basis that said company, TFT, does not possess and has not submitted evidence. Your Honor, keyword does not possess. Not merely submission, but does not possess and has not submitted evidence of a valid Guam contractor's license to perform the work dictated by GDOE IFP 26-2021. GDOE never addressed a key assertion of the protest, which is that TFT did not possess the necessary contractor's license to perform the bid at the time that it submitted its bid, at the time of the evaluation of the bid, nor did it possess it at the time of G4S's protest of the bid award, and still to this day, to our knowledge, does not possess the necessary licenses. GDOE completely ignored this assertion because they cannot becomes a undisputed fact, which renders TFT unqualified to contract for the work involved. Now, secondly, Your Honor, with respect to subcontractors, GDOE has argued and will likely present evidence today that IFB allows for subcontractors because of a provision in a sample contract attached to the IFB. But let's just go back to the terms and conditions that GDOE wants to focus on with respect to their argument. There's actually no provision, and again, this is all part of the procurement record, all already submitted as evidence. There's no provision within the terms and conditions of the IFB that allows for subcontractors that are not identified in a first bid. In its bid, TFT intentionally identified subcontractors and listed its experience and qualifications. Presumably, GDOE's evaluators evaluated TFT's bid based on its representations of those subcontractors, Radiocom not being one of them. In fact, if TFT is now representing that it is in compliance with the bid, the procurement law, and the contractor's license law, because it has retained a company who holds a contractor's license, although not the property specialty license, which we will present evidence on, then TFT would be improperly modifying its bid, which is a violation of IFB Terms and Conditions 3.1.11, which explicitly states that bids may be modified or withdrawn by a written notice received from the bidder prior to the time and debt date set for bid opening. There's actually no provision that allows for modification after a bid opening. And so when when GDOE evaluated TFT's bid, it had no knowledge of Radiocom and did not evaluate TFT's bid based on Radiocom's qualifications or expertise. Furthermore, and more importantly, this does not change the analysis or outcome on this appeal. Putting aside any kind of discussion of what kind of license is required, it is undisputed and the evidence shows that TFT itself is not, and it is not at all licensed by the CLB, which is an explicit requirement of Guam law, CLB rules and regs 3.1, and the IFB. This fact alone ends this appeal. But assuming that TFT was not required to be licensed, which they are, or that it can modify its bid with a new subcontractor, which it cannot, the evidence shows and will show that a C-68 license, not a C-15, is required, and by its own admission, Radiocom does not have the necessary license to perform the work. By TFT taking the position that is not required to be licensed by the CLB, and that it does not have to have a C-68 specialty license, it is essentially saying that it, a business from Florida and not from Guam, despite its representation in its bid packet that it is a local company and entitled to local preference, that it knows better than the OPA, the CLB, and the companies that have done business on this island for years as to what Guam law requires. Since Your Honor will allow arguments for TFT, I'll just briefly address one argument that they raised in their hearing brief, as I believe I've covered the others. But TFT raises a new argument with respect to timeliness of GFORS's protest. That was not a denial of the protest by GDOE. It should not be considered by the OPA as a proper argument. And this attempt to recharacterize GFORS's protest is both procedurally improper and meritless. TFT cannot stand in the shoes of GDOE and assert timeliness as a grounds for denying the protest several months after the fact. Additionally, because GDO reached the merits of GFORS's protest without raising timeliness, it has waived its ability to assert timeliness now. Further, contrary to TFT's assertions, there is no question that GFORS is protesting the award to TFT because TFT is not properly licensed under Guam law. As previously stated, GFORS maintains that the IFB required bidders to have the necessary licenses. GFORS submitted its protest within the 14 days of learning that TFT did not submit proof of the necessary licenses, and therefore its protest is timely. Based on the evidence that GFORS has presented and will present, Your Honor, GFORS requests that the OPA grant its appeal of GDOE's denial of its protest. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Fong. Mr. Fake.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning, everybody. Just one quick point in terms of rebuttal. The OPA does have GDOE's position is the OPA has jurisdiction or authority to to receive or decide jurisdictional questions, sua sponte, 2 guard div 12109. I'm sorry. 12104C9. So to get into GDOE's opening, in 2015, G4S was protested and awarded by PDS for a contractor's license, in which they successfully defended, in which the OPA stated that it was not a part of the terms and conditions of the evaluation. Today we're here because G4S lost and is now arguing the same argument that they successfully defended against PDS. GDOE's position is that the Guam procurement law provides DOE the authority to develop the specifications for its ISP. On top of that, the record shows the published terms as of April 13. There was no contractor's license. And then again, when the question was brought up to remove all doubt on May 18, GDOE clarified that a contractor's license would not be involved in the evaluation and award. GDOE's position is that all bidders here today were evaluated equally. TFT was awarded in compliance with the Guam procurement law as well as the terms and conditions of the IFB. GDOE was not favoring, as G4S is arguing, anybody. We were using the terms and conditions towards an evaluation and award. Again, only after they lost did they challenge the evaluation terms. Roughly 100 days after the publish, roughly 70 days after the clarification. So for GDOE's position, G4S didn't provide legal authority to later insert evaluation terms and conditions after the fact. Rather, 5211 directly addresses it, and that's what GDOE did in this position, in that an IFP shall only evaluate an award by terms and conditions published, and that no criteria not published shall be used in the evaluation award. In addition, federal courts have tackled this exact issue numerous times, in which they stated similarly that if it's not published, a contractor's license is not published, you can't insert it after the fact into the evaluation and award. Lastly, I'd like to point out a statement made in OPA PA 15-012 in the formal hearing by the public auditor, bear with me, on December 14, 2015. Licensing can be done after award because an off-island contractor would be prejudiced if they have to get a Guam license. And why would an off-island contractor want to get a Guam license unless they were going to get an award? And that is a responsibility factor that can be determined post-award. So, in summary, Guam procurement law directly addresses this. The federal courts have tackled this issue, and the OPA has stated in 2015, directly addressing the protest issue here. For this reason, GDOE respectfully requests that this appeal and protest be denied and dismissed. Thank you.
Thank you.
Just real briefly, Mr. Public Auditor, this case provides this office an opportunity to provide guidance on two, I think, important issues for procurement moving forward. One of those is specifications in the review of bids, and the other one is notice. The contracting officer of DOE's argument is it's not required since I didn't specify it, and it's not a specification since I didn't require it. It's this circular logic in the world of responsiveness to a bid really asks questions about, well, why are the responsiveness to bids so limited if we're going to be doing technical work? But more importantly, Your Honor, it just completely ignores the contracting officer's responsibility to determine the responsibility of a bidder. If it's not in the bid packet, okay, but you still got to make sure the person can do the job. And this idea that when the public auditor said that business licensing can be determined or acquired after the bid means that any licensing can be determined after the bid is as strange as saying that a lawyer from Gibson Dunn in Los Angeles can come to Guam, bid on Guam legal work, and then just say, well, I'll take the Guam bar, and before it's done, I'll get a Guam license to be a Guam licensed lawyer. Not all licensing is the same, Your Honor. And then on the issue of notice, Judge, the agencies have to decide, and I think with guidance from the public auditor's office, it'll be helpful. Do you have to provide notice to everybody in bid, everybody who's provided a bid? Do we just provide notice to the winner? Well, what happens if a matter goes to appeal? Should the agencies have to provide notice to somebody like PDS, who was a good faith bidder in this and somehow got ignored in the process when the appeal happened? So I think for those two issues, Judge, we look forward to the eventual rulings of the OPA. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Johnson.
Yes, Your Honor. Again, I represent TFT. I think I'd like to start out first in addressing, I guess, this assumption that has become prevalent in this case and the other cases involving the CLB licenses in front of you. There is this general assumption that the winning bidders in each one of these cases automatically is required to have a CLB license. And this is honestly an issue that really needs to be addressed here. The one thing that has been mentioned, that has been not been mentioned by the other parties who have raised these arguments, and Mr. Potts, is while they do focus on the fact, the definition of a contractor, they don't look at the second section in 21 GCA Chapter 20, which considers the exemptions. The exemptions include that a person, that the chapter, including its license requirements, shall not apply to a person who sells or installs any finished products, materials, or articles or merchandise which are not actually fabricated into and do not become a permanent fixed part of the structure or to the construction, alteration, or improvement or repair of personal property. Ultimately, what this goes to is the fact that contractors' licenses are for construction. This is not construction. This is the expansion of a Wi-Fi network at Guam schools. This involves maybe laying out wire and installing Wi-Fi units. This does not involve tearing down walls. This does not involve building new buildings on property. This involves the installation of finished products that do not become a permanent part of the structure. Anybody who's ever dealt with a computer realizes that these things eventually need to be replaced. They are not permanent parts of the structure. This is something that the public auditor needs to understand here when dealing with contractors' licenses. Moving on, again, we raised the argument that G4S's bid was untimely. The public auditor can consider this argument, again, because it was raised de novo, because the public auditor's review is de novo of agency procurement appeals. G4S should have filed its protest within 14 days after Amendment 4 was issued on May 18, 2021. That's when G4S first knew or should have known that GDOE was not going to consider a contractor's license to be a requirement in this procurement. And again, the Supreme Court of Guam has addressed this issue in DFS versus GIAA, which is 2020 Guam 20, where it says that courts have consistently rejected the argument that a party becomes aggrieved for purposes of a procurement protest when it learns it has not been awarded a contract. Therefore, it's not when G4S learned that it wasn't going to be awarded the contract under the terms that it wanted when it became aggrieved. It's when it became aware that the procuring agency was not going to consider the contractor's license to be a requirement to bid on this project. That's 14 days after that date, which was May 18, 2020, is the date that G4S should have filed its procurement protest. Instead, it filed its protest on July 29th, 2021. That's why this is untimely. There is one other point that I'd like to raise, and that's after listening to the motion hearings that we were not a part of, and after listening to Mr. Potts' argument, there seems to be sort of an underlying current in the argument raised by G4S that about the fact that TFT is not a local company. And I think it's important that these types of xenophobic arguments not be raised in front of the public auditor. And these wouldn't be proper for a trial at the Superior Court of Guam or the District Court. In fact, it would be grounds for mistrial. I mean, this happened before on Guam in I&F Corp. Guam versus Tumon Hillside Corp., where the court upheld the granting mistrial because the counsel counsel for Tumon Hillside made inappropriate inflammatory remarks about the personal wealth principles of INF and rejected prejudicial and irrelevant comments about foreign investors. These types of arguments have no place in argument and really should not be brought up in front of the public auditor or any court in Guam. What we really are here to talk about is whether a contractor's license is required in order to do this type of work. And really, all we're talking about is installing Wi-Fi units and connecting them to wires that are already connected to an existing network here. I mean, if we are going to start requiring a contractor's license for that type of work, then we're going to have to start requiring contractor's license anytime anybody installs a microwave or a toaster in any Guam entity. This is an overreach of the law and is far beyond what's allowed under the contractor statute. Thank you.
Thank you. this may be out of the ordinary for me to be making this comment at this point, but I understand that six years ago, the OPA did make mention of the fact that a license was not required. But I think what I'd like for all of you to be able to somehow show me during the presentation of this evidence is that, one, that a special, if there's a difference between a regular license or a specialty license. And I think Mr. Walsh made a good example that I've been raising since I first heard this case. I mean, I may have an announcement out for a hearing officer for the Office of Public Accountability. Jarek probably knows more procurement law and has forgotten more procurement law than I've learned. But if he will just submit a bid, he could get a business license as a consultant, but he would not be able to get a hearing officer's license as a hearing officer, as the last public auditor could not be the hearing officer because she was not a lawyer, was not licensed on Guam. And so I'm wondering whether or not that's a special, when it gets to specialty licenses, there is a requirement that maybe not be specifically mentioned in the IFB, but at least have something in the record that would show that the one that was going to win the contract had within their employ someone with that license. It could be Jarek Consultants, and he has employed a licensed Guam attorney in his office. In his company, and could sit as the hearing officer. And if that was in the procurement package that was reviewed by the procuring agency, maybe it might not have been explicit in the IFB, but was there something in the review of the procurement record that showed that this person would be and could be licensed on Guam, not just a business license, not just a contractor's license, but if a specialty contract was going to be necessary, that license was going to be able to be done at the time of award. And so I'm hoping that you'll clear it up. I mean, I've been going at this with Jarek, and we've been discussing it for weeks, and I want that, and that's the reason why I allowed everybody, and I'm going to allow everybody to make presentations, because I don't know how much work is going to need to be done. As an example, I'm replacing the air conditioners at my condo. You would think that wouldn't be necessarily need any major construction, but one of the people that I had come in to look at it was going to bring a carpenter to determine how much was going to have to cut out of the ceiling to be able to move in the new compressors inside the units. And he finally recommended that I just replace it with a similar type, and so the same sizes go in, and there's no need for any major construction. So, I mean, that's why I'm allowing this presentation, and that's the reason why I've denied the motion for a summary judgment, because I want to know. I mean, I understand that this office has in the past that responsibility can be provided after award, But I'm wondering whether or not this office now needs to speak to whether or not, one, there is a difference when it's a specialty license, and two, whether or not the procurement record actually shows that within the procurement record there were there was consideration to assure the procuring agency that the license could be received after receiving the award. Okay? I don't know if that's inappropriate to make, but it was something that has been gnawing at me and woke me up this morning at 4 and trying to think about this case and hoping that in the presentation of the evidence this week that all of those concerns of mine will be cleared up. Okay? You can call your first witness.
Understood, Your Honor. Thank you. We'd like to call Eric Roberto as our first witness.
Please state your full name for the record.
Eric
Joseph Roberto.
Do you solemnly swear or affirm that the testimony you're about to provide is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Good morning, Mr. Roberto. Can you tell us where you are currently employed?
I'm currently employed with GFRS Electronic Systems One.
And how long have you been employed by GFRS?
8 months.
So that's roughly May 2021, is that right?
That's correct.
Okay. And what is your position at GFRS?
My position, I came in as the operations manager. I covered down on the operations of the electronic side of the house. I'm also currently the RME for G4S as the telecommunications specialty C68.
Okay, you used the acronym RME. Can you just explain what that stands for?
RME is Responsible Management Employee.
And have you been the operations manager the entire time you've been employed by GFRS?
That's correct.
Okay. And have you been the RME for the C68 telecommunications license the entire time you've been at GFRS?
No. I became the RME from end of July of this year.
Okay. And can you describe the kind of work that GFRS does, just generally?
Generally, we're a manned security, cash solutions, electronic security, document solutions, everything that takes care of pretty much security for. Yeah.
Okay. Is there anything that I missed that may be relevant? Any other kind of work that you guys, GFRS, does that is relevant to the business at issue here?
Sure. We take care of a lot of telecommunication work. We do a lot of infrastructure work, fiber optic works. Anything dealing with connectivity, also.
Okay. And prior to your employment with G4S, where were you employed, if at all?
Velocity LLC.
Okay. And how long were you at Velocity LLC?
5 years.
Okay. And what was your employment prior to Velocity, if any?
G4S.
Okay. So you were at G4S before?
That's correct.
Okay. And how long were you at G4S? During that time?
16 years.
Okay, and what was your title within the last 5 years prior to your ending employment at the time of GFRS?
I was a telecommunications manager. Prior to that, I was the operations manager. Prior to that, I was a technician.
Okay, and what were your roles and responsibilities in the last 5 years of your employment at GFRS during that time?
A lot of it had to do with installing, certification. I took care of all of the telecommunication work with G4S. Did design builds, put some infrastructure, worked with different corporations, or worked with our RME at the time. Submitted bids, prepared proposals, prepared costs, and labor for G4S.
Okay, so how long have you been in the telecommunications field?
Over 27 years.
All right. And can you explain your current job duties with G4S?
her job duties right now at G4S is to ensure that, you know, like, that 27 guys under me have families to take care of. That's first priority, take care of that. The other thing is to ensure profitability, making sure G4S is running smoothly. There's, you know, everything that covers down from security, scheduling employees for jobs, looking at technical bids that come through, whether it be security, whether it be CCTV, telecommunications, infrastructures, fire alarm systems, intrusion systems, access systems. We look down, we look over, make sure everything's running smoothly so that we have everything needed so that our technicians can go out and do a responsible job when they get out there. They have the right equipment.
Okay, and earlier you testified that you, for the Army, the responsible management employee. Could you just elaborate that on that a little bit more? What is an Army?
So the Army, the responsible management employee, in my case, as a C68, telecommunications communications, is a specialty license. That license covers me down, or covers down the company, that we can take care of anything that had to do with telephony, transport, data, networking, designs, bid proposals, ensuring that what is spelled out is all, the boxes are all checked, that we meet the requirement to install, service, certify, all to compete with telecommunications.
Okay, and the C68 telecommunications license, is that a license that's provided by the CLB?
That is correct.
Okay, so you are currently, you personally are are licensed by the Contractors License Board.
Correct. I am currently licensed by the Contractors Board, CLB 021-1672 is my number.
Do you hold any other licenses by the Contractors License Board?
I do not.
Okay. And how long have you had a C68 telecommunications license by the Contractors License Board?
As of July this year, 7 months. Seven? May, June, July.
Okay. And are you aware of what other licenses G4S holds by the CLB?
Sure. G4S holds a C15 license, C19, C20, and, of course, the specialty license C16, telecommunications.
Okay. I just want to be clear for the record. When I say the CLB, you understand me to mean the Contractor's License Board.
Correct? That's correct.
Okay. Are you familiar with the CLB's rules and procedures?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. And how have you become familiar of these rules and procedures?
There's a lot of legwork in the beginning. You know, from just trying to understand how the CLB works, for how they even came into place. So what I had to do was, of course, I had to make phone calls all the way through, try to figure this out, to become an Army or to try and get a contractor's license. Of course, I called the contractor's license, got some information from what was needed. I had to fill out an application. From that application, I had to go out and get three different references. Whether one of them was for integrity, you know, how well people know me, you know, how my finances, how I am as a person, and then the other one was three references regarding my work history. So everything was based on that. After I got all that those were testimonials from three references, total of six. And after that, what I had to do was fill out my work history, submit the application. After I've done submitted the application, I had to wait. You know, it's really 45 days that they do their investigation on your history, talk to the references and so forth. And then once that's all completed, they call you, give you a time and date as to when the license is going to be, or the test will happen. And it's a two-part test. So, of course, you have the familiarization on law, and then also the telecommunication or the specialty or the contract that you're applying for. In my case, it's the C68 telecommunications license. So it's a two-part test. You have two chances to do the law. If you fail the second one, then you would have to wait a year and then come back and redo the test. We'd have to refill out the application all the way through. Of course, your specialty is, you know, if you knew it all the way back there, you would just present it. After you have successfully passed, they'll give a week or two to give you a call and say, okay, congratulations, you've passed the test. After that has been done and successful, you'd have to going back to the application. After you have done that, you had to pay to get all the references that you needed to take the test. And then, of course, go through the test. Then after you pass the test, then you would apply and pay all your fees that you need to for the license. And that would cover down on a year. To understand the law, for every quarter, there's a rate that you would pay for every quarter. Yearly is $400 and so forth down the line, $300, $200, based on quarters. At the same time, during the application part, the application asks you to list the companies that you would be an RV for. In my case, it was G4S. So I got a hold of G4S and said, okay, we know for a fact that you're going to be the contracting company. I will be the responsible management employee, which ties both parties together to do contractual work or any kind of bids. After that was done, I went ahead and gave the information to G4S. G4S in turn came back to the CLB, put in the proper application for myself to put my license under their license. So in that way, it's spelled out on the contractor's license board that I represent G4S.
Okay. And were there materials that you used to study I believe you testified there are two tests, there's a general law and then the specialty law for the specific license that you
Correct.
Need to apply for.
Correct.
Were there materials that you used to study for these tests?
There are materials that I studied in. It's the Contractors License Board Law book handout that they give you to study for. And then the specialty contractor's license, because I am a telecommunication license holder, was specific to my specialty, and not a lot of people can handle or can cover down on that specialty unless they've been in the trade for quite some time to understand what's needed. So an essay was to be written from start to finish as to how you would employ or how you would deploy yourself out to a contract, starting with safety. After time management, you get into materials, procurement, mobilization, equipment with respect to safety and so forth. And you would just write down everything you would do starting from start to finish. How you deal with customers, where the customer's coming down. And that's the essay you need to write out. You want to write down a lot of, your certification, your licenses, what you have, what type of equipment, specialty equipment that you have to test cables. In our case, of course, they're going to be DSP flutes, 100s or the 3000s, or get into fiber optic fusion splicers, what you would use during that time when it comes to with glass transport. Yeah.
Okay. As far as you're aware, do the CLB's rules and regulations or procedures identify different types of contractor's licenses?
They do.
Okay. And I think you just testified as to the procedure for obtaining these licenses. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. Are you familiar with GDOE's invitation for bid 26-2021 indoor and outdoor wireless local area infrastructure installation project that was issued on May 28, 2021?
Yes, very familiar.
Have you read the bid packet?
I have.
Okay. Do you understand the scope of work that is being called for in that IFP?
I do.
And are you aware of whether G4S submitted a proposal for that IFP?
We have, yes.
Okay. Were you employed by G4S when it submitted its proposal for the IFP?
That's correct. Yes, I was.
Okay. When G4S bid on the IFP, Do you know who held a C-68 telecommunications license at that time, or if any?
Yes. We had Robert Kelly as our RME at the time.
Okay. So you didn't have the C-68 telecommunications license, but someone at G4S did have that C-68 telecommunications license at the time that it submitted its bid.
That's correct.
Okay. And did you have any involvement with G4S's submission of its bid proposal to the RFP?
I did.
Okay. Can you explain what involvement you had?
After reviewing the IFB and looking at it, only because I'm very familiar with the schools, the infrastructure itself, I've been pretty well versed with it. The IFB itself, my partake in it was to make sure that the drawings that were provided were true to the same manner, that nothing changed, and pretty much nothing changed with the exception of the new schools that were added from Thiessen to Atikau to the one in Okudu. So there are some schools there that I wasn't familiar with, but for the application of installation, yes, very familiar with it. So my job was to come in, take a look at it, determine how much cable I'm going to be needing on transport from the Cat 6 cable required, where we're going to take the drop from, if you would, Your Honor. It's called an IMO, information multi outlet, right? Information outlet, and you would have to, in turn, I'd have to determine how much conduit is going to be needed to run from location, whether it be an outdoor access point, whether it be 30 feet, 60 feet. Take that per school or per classroom or per AP access point, determine how many, already it's been spelled out how many access point where they're going to go, but what's missing there is that determine of the footages, the cost, and that's how this bid is put together, how much labor hours, what's needed on the back end, whether you're going to need an extra data module, whether you're going to need an extra RJ45 module, or if you're going to have to test the cable out, how long it's going to take to test the cable for each cable to access. Verifying, making sure all of the equipment's calibrated and ready to go. The other thing in there was, because we also are working with another company regarding the network switches that are needed to be provided, we needed to work with them to determine the compatibility to make sure that it is a smooth transition with the current system that's already in place, because that transport needs to get over to the access point. So we need to determine the labor hours, what that's going to take to program. Work with GUDOE, what's the downtime, what are the schools' downtime, who's available to open the classrooms. I mean, these are all things that are considered into putting this project together. Doing that is not an easy task, because with history working at the schools, you always have these concerns of, okay, what's going to be the downtime trying to get access into a room that everybody's trying to find the key, or you need to find an aide to open up the door, or who's going to be available. So my job in this whole IFB was to determine the total labor hours, the total amount of equipment, the total cost, putting it into a worksheet, combining, making sure everything's going to meet the compatibility for what's needed for the IFB, or what's spelled out in the IFB.
Okay, so
and the amendments. Sorry.
Okay. So let's actually go back to the IFB then, since you testified as to, I think, a little bit of what the scope of the work is being called for. But I have in front of you a set of exhibits. If you could turn to tab 2, and the documents are identified at the bottom with a base number that starts with the letter G. So tab 2. Is what I'm looking at. It's the bottom, you could see the base numbers.
Oh, okay, sure.
So the front page says indoor and outdoor wireless local area network infrastructure installation project IFB invitation for bid number 26-2021. Is this the bid that you had testified earlier about?
Yes.
Okay. And you testified that you understood the scope of work that was being called for by this IFB. Can you just, if you can, you said a lot of technical things, which we appreciate. but if you could just break that down a little bit more, maybe simplify it a little bit so we non-telecommunications people can understand. But just if you could explain to us what was the scope of work that is being called for in this IFB? Just generally.
How about we do this, Ron, if you may, so that I'll get on the other side where that blue table is coming out of, right? So that outlet there runs to a network switch, which actually provides the communication back for his computer to run down to get all the information you need. So basically what this is to either run a cable or to use the existing outlet that's there, connect the cable to it, run it up the ceiling, put what they call an access point here to provide the connectivity for wireless inside this room. If we wanted a strict wireless for this room, we can do that. We block the next room over, or we can transition other access points on the other side to communicate back. Now, this cable alone, to be able to terminate the data jack on the back end of it, is a requirement. It's a certification that you need to go through. To pull the cable down to where the network switch is at, which provides that information, is also needs to be terminated on what they call a patch panel. That also needs a certification to be able to terminate on. On top of that, when you're done terminating the two ends, you have to test it all the way through. Now, the IFB, in this case, will say they have one or two. If the cable's not there, then you run another cable back to the switch and you provide it. If not, then you're going to utilize one of the ports because there are three data ports. You would use one of the port and connect it running all the way through. Now, the question there that I had in going back to putting the bid together was, okay, if I'm at 300 feet, the max you can go on these cables are 290 feet. That's not including the little patch cords that goes from the wall to the computer, right? So now you're adding another either 5 feet or you're adding another 10 feet. The question that we had to impose on ourselves, or what I imposed on myself was, okay, I always took the farthest room because that would determine what the history is, because we have history of how far these cables are in length. Now, if I exceed the 290 feet by adding a patch cord and running an additional 50, 60 feet, that's going to tell me I'm not going to be in certification mode. I can't pass this cable because I went past the limit. Now, what that entails now is, do I add another switch so that I can run a fiber optic cable to bring it closer to the AP so that I can certify it? That's how this works. It's almost like your cell phone, if you would, Your Honor. Your cell phone is the computer. You're connected to a wireless, which is the antenna that's out there. The antenna that's brought up from GTA, Docomo, IT&E, whoever it may be, that's your access point. I'm connected to that. The cable from that access point runs back to a mainframe, or the switch, if you would, back at the home unit. That's where all the information is at. That's basically what GEODOE has here, is they have an information, which is the main distribution frame. That's connected back to GTA or whoever from FSIS or the service provider, and that's how you would get all your information to yourself. Now, there's a lot more into it, but I think that's the easiest way to break it down. If you actually take a look at it from that cable where that goes down to a switch, And then from there, it goes to another switch. There's a lot of main distribution frames, intermediate distribution frames, information outlet. So there's a transition of this cable. Now, transport of data is within the limitations of the cable itself. That's how fast things get. Now, it depends on what the data is. Mind you, with this cable, if the current system is a Cat5B cable and it runs to the information outlet, and I take a Cat6 cable and I put it on top of it, it's not going to work. I mean, it'll work, but it won't pass. Only because now you're taking something big, which is a Cat6, and trying to shove it into something small that's not going to transport data correctly, if you would, if they certify it. Okay, so it's a lot of technical, not a lot, but it's more your certification on what you need to do. You need to know that a 5E matches a 5E and a 6 matches a 6. In this case, the schools, it changes, the patch panel changes, a lot of things change, so those were all incorporated into how this whole bid came about.
Okay. And can you identify, with the exhibit that's in front of you, can you identify just if there's anywhere in that IFP that kind of generally describes the work that you had just talked about?
G04.
G004?
Yeah, G004.
Okay, and can you tell us what part of G004 we're looking at?
Section 2.2, purpose.
Okay.
Second paragraph.
Okay. Can you just read that out loud for us?
The wireless LAN installation to expand wireless LAN infrastructure at 40 GDOE public schools would primarily consist of furnish and install indoor and outdoor wireless access points and PoE edge switches hardware. Furnish and install required data cables, patch cables, and conduit. Test and validate wireless access points, and furnish all supplies, materials, and labor required to complete the installation of a turnkey solution.
Okay, and earlier you testified that G4S also has a C15 license, correct?
That's correct.
And I understand that you do not have the C15 license, but do you know the difference between a C15 and a C68 telecommunications license?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Okay. Actually, I have an exhibit also in that binder, exhibit 8, I believe it falls under tab 9. Rules and regulations to, I guess, govern your work as a C68 telecommunications licensee?
I do.
Do you know if these rules and regulations identify C15 licenses and C68 telecommunications licenses?
It does.
Okay. If you could just turn to page. Or if you can tell us where in this document you can find a C15 and a C68.
So on page 12 of the CLB rules and regs.
Okay, so that's C15. And then the C68 telecommunications license?
Actually starts on page 16, but for the telecommunication is...
And what is your understanding of a C15 license?
So C15 license are more, it's electronic driven. And, you know, as it says here, specialty contractor with contracting business and execution of equipment and electronic controls. So electronic controls are more of open close. You know, I want this to work, so you would, if you would click a mic, that's open. Let it go, close. The cabling behind it is totally different from telecommunications. It's more stranded. It's two conductors. It's considered conductors. You'll be reading off an oscilloscope. It's the measurement of power. It's the measurement of watts, current. That's how you would test systems out. With respect to programming, you know, programming is really not there. It's just turn switch, engage, disengage is the difference in the old CB radios. Fix it. Click the mic. Transmit. So it's more AM, FM, if you will. Amplified modulation, frequency modulation. So that is your C15 licenses. Repairing not computer equipment, but electronic equipment. There, your audio C15. That's a C15 license.
Okay, thank you. And going back to the IFB, so based on your experience, and you know, testified to that earlier, and your understanding of the IFB and the CLB's rules and regulations, what licenses from the CLB would be required to perform the work done on the IFB?
C68 Communications and Telecommunications.
And does the bidder, meaning whoever is actually bidding for the procurement, do they have to hold the licenses themselves from the CLB?
That's correct.
Okay. Is there a specific regulation in or rule or procedure in the CLB's rules and procedures that require this?
So, of course, the bidder or the contracting company, just like, for example, your consulting services, and it's just, right, you would go and apply yourself because it's your business. But in order for you to do that business, you have to have a responsible management employee, because you as a business have a bigger responsibility to ensure that all your rules, your permits, and everything with the government law is working. But you also need that one specific, your specialty guy that's going to be, like you mentioned earlier, what Jerry does, like, you know, a different kind of consultant that doesn't fall under your license. So you hold the license because he is your responsible managed employee that oversees the direct management of that specialty itself. That is the specialty.
Okay. And if I can point you back to Exhibit 8, the rules and regulations. If I can direct you specifically to page 6, 3.1. And it says individual licenses required.
Okay.
Okay. And you're familiar with this rule, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Can you read that rule out loud to us?
3.1, application form of contractor's license. All applications.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead. It's page 6, part 3. Oh, yes, there's 2.0. Oh, there's 2 3.1s. Okay, so it's the second 3.1.
Okay.
After, right under E.
Sure.
Okay.
So individual license required. Responsible management employee must be licensed. The corporation, partnership, or joint venture which employs him must also be licensed. Must be also licensed as a contractor.
Okay, you can stop there. Thank you. And so based on your experience being a licensed contractor and working for G4S, being familiar with the CLB's rules and regs, is it your understanding that the company that's bidding for the work, that they themselves have to have the license from the Guam Contractors License Board?
That's correct.
Okay, and can a bidder subcontract work out to someone with the licenses from the contractor's license board without it itself not having those licenses? Sorry, you said no?
No.
Okay. And that falls, your understanding is that falls under the CLB's rules and regulations 3.1, individual licenses required, is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. Are you aware that G4S filed a protest with GDOE with respect to this IFB?
I am.
Were you involved at all with G4S's decision to protest?
Yes, I was.
Okay. And I'm just going to direct you to another exhibit.
G554.
Yes. And just to identify the document, it is a document that has G4S Security Systems Guam Inc. on the top, dated July 29, 2021, directed to Ms. Carmen T. Charkers. Are you familiar with this document, Mr. Roberto?
Yes.
Okay. And is this the protest that G4S submitted to GDOE with respect to this bid?
That's correct.
Okay. And what is the basis of the protest? If you could just read the second paragraph. It starts with after careful review.
Sure. After a careful review of documentation provided or documents provided by the Guam Department of Education in response to G4S FOIA request dated 27 July 2021 and under 5 GCA Chapter 5, 425, authority to resolve protest and solicitations and awards, G4S would like to officially protest the notice of award for solicitation bid number GDOE IFB 026-2021, indoor and outdoor wireless technologies for tomorrow, on the basis that said company does not possess and has not submitted evidence of a valid Guam contractor's license to perform work dictated by GDOE IFB 026-2021.
Okay, and did G4S know when it received? Well, you're aware that IFB had an amendment number 4.
Correct.
Okay. Did TFT know at the time it received amendment number 4 that Technologies for Tomorrow did not have a contractor's license? Okay. Do you know when G4S found out that Technologies for Tomorrow does not have a contractor's license?
After the review of the Sunshine Act FOIA.
I'm sorry, can you just elaborate? The Sunshine Act FOIA? What is that?
Sorry, the Freedom of Information Act.
Okay, who was that submitted to? Was it the CLB or GDOE?
It was sent back to GDOE. So we received it from we requested for it. We received it. We reviewed it. We noticed it. And so, of course, we protested.
Okay, and did G4S do its research as to TFT licenses?
That's correct. And then we also, of course, went on to determine, because the documentation we got on the FOIA was unlegible. Mm-hmm. We couldn't see the business license. And of course, we made the homework calling the contractor's license board to find out if they were contracted as well. That's how we came on to the
Did G4S also contact the Department of Revenue and Taxation? Any information with respect to CFT?
We did.
Okay. And what information did you obtain from the Department of Revenue and Taxation with respect to CFT?
The information we got was that they do have a business license for services of electronic equipment, sales, retail and sales of electronic equipment, computers, software, hardware.
Okay. So just to clarify, your research indicated that they had a business license for the sale of equipment.
Correct.
Okay. I think you included services under there?
Correct.
Okay. Do you know if they have a business license that includes services?
Not services, just the retail of computer software and hardware.
Okay, thank you. That clarifies my misunderstanding. Okay. And just going back to the protest, if I can direct you to the following page, G555. It's dated September 3rd, 2021. The top says Department of Education, Office of Supply Management. You can read this document. Are you familiar with this document, Mr.
Yes.
Roberto? Okay, and what is this document?
This is the response.
The response from?
The response to protest letter received on August 19th.
Okay, so this is the response by GDOE.
GDOE.
Okay. As to G4S's protest.
Correct.
And if you can just read the second paragraph of that document, please, where it starts pursuant to.
Pursuant to G4S Security Systems 1, and thereafter referred to as G4S protest, G4S states Technologies for Tomorrow does not possess and has not submitted evidence of a valid Guam contractor's license regarding GDOE IFB 026-2021. G4S further states that amendment number 4 includes answers related to the requirement of the Guam contractor's license.
Okay, if you could just continue to read the second paragraph.
Guam procurement law mandates that an IFB shall be evaluated based on requirements set forth in the IFB, and that no criteria may be used in bid invitation that are not set forth in the IFB. In this case, the IFB and its published terms and conditions did not require the submission of a contractor's license in the bid submission. In addition, Amendment Number 4 did not require bidders to submit a contractor's license with their bid, with their bid submission. Therefore, pursuant to Guam procurement law, GDOE properly evaluated and awarded in accordance with terms and conditions set forth in the IFB.
Thank you, Mr. Roberto. Just to clarify for the record, I think you said bid invitation, but the document actually says bid evaluation. Is that correct?
Bid evaluation.
Yes, okay. So your understanding that this was GDOE's, that this was the entire basis for GDOE's denial of G4S's protest.
Correct.
Okay. Did G4S receive any other responses from GDOE as to why it denied its protest?
No.
So this was it. Okay. So I just want to go back to, and I apologize for taking you all over the place, but I want to go back to the IFB and the licenses that you testified to earlier. Based on your experience, which you testified about, and your understanding of the IFB and the CLB's rules and regulations, would a C-15 license be sufficient for the work that GDOE was requesting bidders to bid on with respect to this IFB?
No.
And why not?
The C-15 is controls. Cabling is different, totally different. You're not using the same equipment for testing. The labor's there, pull the cable, but there's requirements in that pulling on cable. It's not the same, totally different. One is stranded cable, the other one's solid cable. One's 18 gauge, the other one's 22 gauge, which is a smaller gauge cable, 24. One's got four pairs, so yeah, it's control.
And so just to elaborate that, based on your understanding, would a C68 telecommunications license be required for the work that needs to be performed in this bid?
Definitely.
Okay, and can you just elaborate a little bit more on why?
The communication infrastructure is more, everything's drawn around IT, information technology, data transport. That's not the requirement for C-15. C-15 is more just turn it on and turn it off, kind of. IT, information technology requires switches, data transport. What is the right equipment to transport this data, whether it be 250 megahertz, 300 megahertz, 1 gig, when you get into the fiber optic cables and so forth. T15 doesn't do that. This also requires you to set up APs, access points. After you're done, you got to do a what they call a heat map, if you would. Heat mapping is based off how strong your signal is within the area. You got to meet a certain heat map requirement. C15 doesn't require you to do those kinds of things. This one does. I think it requires you to have a heat mapping that's pretty good. Plus your transport, you got to make sure everything's certified because the IFA I read already must be certified.
Thank you. Are there any other government procurements that G4S bid on that are similar to this IFB?
Yes.
Okay. What was that government procurement?
GCC. We have two actually. We have GCC. Currently, right now, we were awarded for Building 300, which is a new building that they wrecked out, different contractors. They came in, they built the building, and GCC requires the same type of installation for what GDO is asking. However, GCC is new cabling that runs back to an intermediate distribution frame. It requires the same thing as access points. We're not using an Aruba system that was not specified, but the equipment that we use for GDOE. We use a different type of system for GCC, and it's called a Ruckus. They both do the same thing. They both need the same switching hardware, the requirements. They both need the connectivity back to the main distribution to be able to command and control, if you would, Your Honor, for I want this amount of data going this way and this amount of data going this way. We're interconnecting two other buildings into the one building, which actually gives more information out, and we're doing that via fiber optic. But overall, in general, it's the same cable, same type of hardware, if you would, switches, requirement of switches, requirement of access points, requiring of mounting the access point, requiring of, you know, whatever conduits needed, requiring of a ladder wrap, and conduit, yeah, pretty much the same thing.
Okay, and just to be clear for the record, what does GCC stand for?
Bowen Community College.
Okay, so you testified that G4S bid on it. Were you involved in G4S's submission to that bid?
I was.
Okay. And can you just describe generally what was your involvement?
The same thing for IB. So my was to oversee to make sure that the labor work do conduct walkthrough, do the walkthrough of the building that's being erected, finding out what the requirements are, finding out what the distances are, what kind of changes are happening, the labor it's going to take, the equipment we need to procure, the manpower that's needed, the type of cable requirement, whether it be, because in that case we had a lot of fiber involved, whether it be a single mode, a multi-mode type of fiber optic cable. Of course, dealing with customers and so forth, putting the bid together.
Okay, and was G4S awarded that contract with the GCC bid?
We were.
Okay. Is G4S currently performing work for that contract?
Yeah, currently we're at a standstill right now because the general contractor is on a standstill. They can't make a decision what kind of ceiling they're going to put up. But okay, that's a specialty. That's somebody else's specialty, not mine. So that'll wait until they're done.
Got it. Okay. And is a contractor's license required for the GCC work?
Yes.
Okay. What contractor's license is required for that work?
Specified C68 telecommunications.
Okay, and was a C15 license required for that?
No.
Okay. Would a C15 license be sufficient to perform the work for the GCC bid?
No.
And is it for all the reasons, same reasons that you testified with respect to the GDOE bid?
That's correct.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Roberto. I have no further questions.
Thank you, Mr. Stake.
Good morning, Mr. Roberto.
Mr. Stake, good morning.
Good morning.
for GDOE. So a few questions. So you said the general contractor for the GCC. Does that mean you're a subcontractor for the GCC contract?
No, we're a different contract from GCC. So the general contractor was to build the building, and then GCC procured their own. Not included. It wasn't inclusive of the main building.
Two separate then, correct? Gotcha. Okay. So is it fair to say you saw the IFB, its full published terms and conditions?
Yes.
Is it fair to say you saw it on April 13 when it was originally issued via online?
Actually, I got a chance to read the IFB come April and the beginning of May, because I was already in negotiations with G4S for employment. Sorry.
Separate item there. Then is it fair to say that you saw the Amendment 4 when it was issued by GDOE as well on May 18th?
Yes.
So just very directly, was a contractor's license required within the IFB violation terms and conditions?
Based on what was given, it wasn't spelled out.
No. And then does G4S itself subcontract?
We do, time to time.
Is it fair to say that G4S relies on its subcontractors for licensing and compliance with licensing?
Definitely.
Yeah.
We do majority of the work in-house, right, because it's specified. There's only so much we can do. We do in the past, we used to have the C13, C15, we even had solar, if you would, on the specialty CCC. Yeah.
And then, sorry, just to back up a little bit to G4S. G4S is a international company, offices all over the world, is that correct?
Yes, it's worldwide.
Okay, and then is it fair to say that you would not recommend G4S to start investing to another country or to another place prior to an award? Is that fair to say?
I'm sorry, I don't understand your question.
Would you recommend G4S to invest prior to a winning an award? Would you recommend that to G4S?
Objection. That's ambiguous.
I guess I'll move on. Okay. Oh, sorry. Okay, so getting into the categories, our expert on the site was also mentioning, and it was also above my head. Is it fair to say that experts will differ on the categories and the licenses used? Is it fair to say that they will have differing opinions?
Objection, Dave.
I'll have an answer. I'll overrule. Go ahead, let's see what you put.
Okay, your question one more time.
Okay, is it possible for experts to have differing opinions as to which categories and which licenses would apply to the services?
No, it's spelled out on the contractor's license for what we can. Even experts, you had an electronic expert come over and try to do telecommunication, you'd be lost.
I don't think you're on, right? I have no further questions.
Thank you, Your Honor. A few minimal questions. Mr. Roberto, you were talking earlier with your lawyer about the RME. You remember that conversation?
Yes.
About being an RME? Pretty general question. I noticed, are you a married man?
I am.
Was getting your RME license more involved and more difficult than getting your marriage license?
Well, yes, definitely.
Okay. I'm not saying the marriage is easier, but like your driver's license, same thing. I mean, getting an RME license is more difficult and complicated and involved than getting a driver's license. Is that fair to say?
It is.
Are you familiar with whether or not the RME regulations require the RME for a company like G4S to be here in residence on Guam?
Yes.
Yes?
Yes.
So in order to be a RME for a company doing work on Guam, you need to be on Guam?
Yes.
Just a few questions about the actual work when you were discussing with the public auditor. Did I understand you're running lines through walls on this project? Is that something that would happen?
Correct.
Are you working with Energized or things running power or various watts or amps, electrical components as part of this job?
No.
No? when you got the, just back to that thing, is there any aspect of this that's powered or is reliant upon electricity?
The PoE switch itself, of course, the equipment gets plugged into the power source. The equipment itself generates it's called a power over Ethernet, if you would. And it requires the access point to be energized via wattage, if you would. And it's dependent on the equipment itself. If you're not familiar with the equipment, so if the equipment requires 4 watts of power, then your switch should be able to require that 4 watts of power running through the cable.
Okay. When you got, or you being G4S, when G4S or you reviewed the bid package that was put out by DOE here, did you have any doubt that to do the work legally on Guam that would require an appropriate contractor's license?
I'm sorry, one more time.
Did you doubt at all when you got the bid package, when you reviewed it, that to do this work on Guam would require to be an appropriate license?
Yeah,
no doubt. No doubt for you. You know the GCC project you talked about?
Sure.
Did GCC specify the particular licenses required in their bid package?
On the amendment, not the bid package.
So if I understand your testimony, you and G4S are doing two similar types of work. And both agencies did not specify the licenses in the original bids, is that right?
That's correct.
But one GovGuam agency has taken it upon itself to specify, and one has not, about which licenses. Is that fair to say?
That's correct.
I imagine that's got to be confusing for business people on Guam, especially if they deny protest based on saying no license is required. Is that fair to say?
Correct.
Thank you, Mr. Public Auditor. I have no further questions. Thank you, Mr. Roberto.
Mr. Johnson.
Okay, for TFD. Good morning, Mr. Roberto.
Good morning.
Let's see. I'd like to go over sort of the scope of work that you were discussing. You mentioned, I guess, the installation of cables. Is that part of it?
Correct.
Okay. And the installation of, was it outlets? Is that also included?
Only if it's required.
Okay, so some of those outlets are already there, then.
Correct.
Okay. You mentioned network switches.
Correct.
Are those already there?
Some of them. Okay. Sorry, I'm sorry. There is a current system in place.
Okay, so this is an expansion of an existing system that's
correct.
In place. And, okay, so somebody else built that system.
Correct.
Do you know who built that system?
So in 2002, actually,
if you could answer my question, I'd appreciate it.
Sure. In the beginning, it was G4S, or Pacific Security Alarm, who put in the infrastructure. G4S, along a couple of years down the line, put in the cabling infrastructure. All the fiber that's in the schools. And then, of course, the switching was a requirement that came out of, or was procured out of GDOE for the current switches, for the switches that are in there.
And who installed these?
PDS had a role in the game early on with the telephony side of it, providing dial tone.
Okay.
Was in there? Yeah, majority of the work was procured out by FSIS on the electronic side.
Okay.
The equipment, the switches.
Did TFT have any work on this?
You know, that's a good question. I don't know if they were there, but I understand, as I understand, they did do the work back in, I guess it was a protest somewhere that I read around with Docomo.
So these cables that you're talking about installing, are those permanent parts of the structure?
No.
Okay. And the outlets, are those permanent parts of the structure? And the access points that you're talking about installing, are those permanent parts of the structure? So these things can all be replaced, yes?
They can be.
Okay. And the cables, if you were to remove the cables, would that cause substantial damage to the structure?
I think it's more of if we're doing access points outdoor and we have to drill a hole out of the building itself, that does now change the integrity of the building.
Are you a structural engineer?
Well, I mean, based off 27 years of experience, No, I'm not an structural engineer, but based off experience, it does do the integrity. There are rules that you can and how big of a hole you can penetrate.
How big of a hole are we talking here?
Well, anything more than maybe, depending on where it's at, you know, because we know we can't drill below a structured beam, or we can't drill through a structured beam.
So that wouldn't be involved here, though?
Well, if you're putting an access point outside,
mm-hmm.
an outdoor access point, and you would have to penetrate through a wall.
But you wouldn't penetrate through a structural beam.
It's part of the bid. I'm sorry, I'm not trying to argue, but I'm just trying to make you understand the bid. It's required if we need to put an access point, and
I'm trying to get an idea. So are you saying it's required to build through a structural beam in order to put an access point outside?
No.
Okay.
Through the wall.
So putting an access point outside, would that damage the structure then?
It's dependent on how hard the earthquake shakes, maybe.
Okay.
That's my take.
Would removing the outside wireless point cause damage to the structure?
No.
Would removing a switch cause damage to the structure?
No.
Would removing a cable make it impossible to reuse the structure?
No.
Would removing a outlet make it impossible to reuse the structure?
No.
Would removing a switch make it impossible to reuse the structure?
No.
Okay. Is there anything else involved in the scope of work that you would need to install aside from cables, outlets, and switches?
No.
Okay. You mentioned C68, which is, I'm sorry, that's, you did a bunch of research in getting your license, right?
Yes.
Okay, and that's found where?
Actually, I started with Brent Tax.
Sure. Where in Guam law is that found, C68? It's in the rules and regulations, right? Okay. And what about, are you familiar, did you look through your research in getting your license, did you look at the Guam code?
No.
Okay.
The only code I kind of want to make sure I'm familiar with is the NEC code, because that falls more into my lane, or our lane.
Okay. So did you look at, by any chance in your research, did you look at 21 GCA Chapter 70 regarding contractors?
I'm sorry, Your Honor. I thought the answer was you did not look at the Guam code.
I'm just making.
I think it seems like it's asked and answered.
It's just a more specific question, just to make sure.
I'll allow it. I want to get as much information,
yes,
understanding as possible.
So, did you look at the chapter regarding contractors in the Guam Code?
Yeah, off the CLB.
Okay. Did you look at section 70101 regarding
you
exceptions?
Right.
Sure, if you want to look at it.
Section
70101. Those are rules and regulations that you're looking at, though, right?
You said 70101.
Yeah. Are you looking, just to make sure we're all aware, you're looking at Exhibit 8, right?
Yes.
Yeah, those are the CLB rules and regulations.
Correct.
I'm not talking about the rules and regulations. I'm talking about the contractor statute.
Okay.
So, are you familiar with that law?
Not thorough.
Okay. Are you aware of which one would take precedent over the other one?
With respect to...
Which one's superior?
Objection calls for legal conclusion.
He's opined on all sorts of legal issues up to this point.
I'll allow just to see. He's trying to set something up, and I want to hear what it is.
So if there's a section in the chapter regarding contractors law, would that be more important, or would something in the rules and regulations be more important?
Well, the way I interpret this CLB,
mm-hmm.
right, on this law, pertains to all the other laws to protect, right? We're protecting contractors, because there's a lot of, if you would, There's a lot of people out there always trying to hire on a contractor to come and do the work.
I understand right? that. If you could maybe stick to answering my question, though.
Why don't you make it more specific? I don't care if you read it.
Sure, all right. Let me read it to you then. Maybe this will help. I've got the statute here, actually. Does anybody mind if I show it to them? Or anybody? No? Okay. I'm handing you, what I love for the record is section 70101, which is exemptions, under the Guam Contractors Law. Have you ever seen that before?
That's the 21 GCA one?
21 GCA, yes. That's not in the packet that you have in front of you.
Okay.
Can you look at C?
I got you.
Okay. Can you read it?
Sure. A person who sells or installs any furnished product, materials, or articles, or merchandise which is not actually fabricated into, do not become a permanent fixed part of the structure or to construction authorization or alteration, improvement or repair of personal's property.
Okay. And sorry, before that, before the letters, it says this chapter shall not apply to, right?
This chapter shall not apply to.
Okay, so those cables and the outlets and the switches you were referring to, and the access points, are those finished products?
After it's handed over.
Yeah. Are they materials?
They are materials.
Okay. Do they become a permanent fixed part of the structure of these schools?
No.
Okay. Thank you.
Anything further with this one?
I think I just have a couple more questions.
Okay.
You mentioned earlier that a company that bids on a contract would need to have all the subcategories of licenses.
Correct.
Itself. It can't rely on a subcontractor.
Correct.
Okay. So would this apply to a general contractor who's building like a structure?
Typically, if a general contractor is doing it, the general contractor based off the CLB is a company that is in the business of course, erecting, right?
Okay.
If there's anything that requires any kind of specialty, part of it is required to have an RME regarding that specialty.
So they can't rely on any subcontractors at all?
They have subcontractors themselves. Okay. Those subcontractors will have their licenses as well.
Okay, but the general contractor would need to have those too?
Right. So the general contractor will be, so for example, electrical.
But they'd also have to have their own RME for electrical.
Correct.
Okay. Well, why even bother having subcontractors then?
Well,
if you can already do the work yourself, why would you bid it out to a subcontractor?
Because the general contractor's responsibility is the direct management of that project itself. So if they had that, then of course there'll probably be 1,000 employees for that, and they didn't have to subcontract it with all different divisions. If you would, they have their own electrical, they'll have their own plumbing, they'll have their own communication, they'll have all of that in that one. I mean, they don't have to sub it out.
But they still have to have their RME, though, right?
They still need to have an RME for each classified area, yes.
Okay. No further questions.
Any redirect?
Just a few questions, Mr. Bernal. I understand that there's discussions of all different types of licenses, and you testified earlier as to what went into what the process was, I guess, of obtaining your CCC telecommunications license, right? And based on your experience, with G4S and your prior work and your understanding of the rules and regulations, you are aware of the difference between a C15 license and a C6A telecommunications license, right?
Correct.
But you're not purporting to be an expert on, you know, all different types of contractors' licenses, is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay, but your understanding, based on your work here in Guam, as well as your review of the rules and regulations and the scope of this project, that if a bidder is contracting with a government agency and it required a contractor's license, that bidder itself has to have a license, correct?
Correct.
Okay. I don't think I have any other questions.
No, thank you.
Your Honor.
Nothing further, Your Honor.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Berger.
Thank you,
Your Honor. I would like to call Nita Bailey from the contractor's license.
Is she downstairs?
I understand she is, yes.
Are we taking a break? Did you want to set up something or no?
It would take more than a short break.
We can take a short break right now if anybody needs to.
We're off the record at 10:45 a.m. We're back on the record at 10:52 a.m.
Please state your full name for the record.
My name is Nita Bailey.
Do you solemnly swear or affirm that the testimony you are about to provide is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Aye.
Please have a seat.
Thank you, Ms. Bailey. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Okay, great. Ms. Bailey, can you tell us where you are currently employed?
I'm currently employed at the Lompoc Capital License Board.
Okay, and how long have you been employed by the Guam Contractors License Board?
About 7 years.
Okay. And Ms. Bailey, I'm just going to refer to the Guam Contractors License Board as the CLB. Do you understand that?
Yeah, the CLB.
Okay, great. I think it'll make it easier for all of us.
Yeah, CLB.
I'm sorry, you said 7 years or 6 years?
Seven years.
Okay. And what is your position at the CLB?
I'm the investigator supervisor.
Okay, and have you been the investigator supervisor for all 7 years that you've been at the CLB?
No.
Okay. What was your prior title before investigation supervisor?
Investigator.
Okay. So when you were an investigator, can you just explain what your roles or duties were?
We investigate complaints that are brought to the department. Consumer complaints, contractors, subcontractors, and we also review applicants for licensing.
Okay, and how long were you an investigator?
About 5 years.
Okay, so you've been the supervisor for about 2 years?
Yeah.
Okay. And so when you were an investigator, you would investigate when anyone would make a complaint to the contractor's license board about a contractor's license. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. And so other than investigator and investigator supervisor, did you hold any other positions at the CLB? No. Okay. And can you just describe what your duties and responsibilities are as an investigator supervisor?
As an investigative supervisor, I oversee the other investigators. I assign to them the cases when it's being submitted to our office, so I review it, and then I assign it to the investigator, and then I help them to follow our standard operating procedure once we receive the complaint until the time that the complaint is finished or closed, and then have them draft the decision and then for the review of our director.
Okay, so you may not do the investigation yourself, but you do have a role in, I guess, the investigation and the complaint process, is that correct?
Yes, I do.
Okay, and was there training that you did when you became an investigator at the CLB? Or any kind of educational classes that you took, or did you have any materials that you read?
Yes, we got, actually before I joined the Contractors License Board, I was also a contractor, so I am kind of well versed with the contractor's job. So, but there was not really a formal training in our agency. We just kind of follow the public law and then the rules and regulations, and the board are the one that's making the decision for the cases that are that we cannot resolve. So the board is the one that decides the cases.
Okay. So you had on the job training, basically.
Yes, on the job.
Okay. And you mentioned you were a contractor prior to working with the CLB. How long were you a contractor for?
Maybe like around 10 years.
Okay. And being a contractor, were you familiar? Did you familiarize yourself with the contractors? Generally the rules and procedures of the CLB?
Yeah.
Okay. When you became an investigation supervisor, was there any training that you had to do that made it may have been different, I guess, from whatever you had done prior to?
The agency did not yet send us to any training. Because I became a supervisor, and then that time, I think 2019, and then we were shut down. So far up to now, there is no training yet for the investigator supervisor.
Okay, but you're, as part of your, I guess, your job duties as both an investigator and investigator supervisor, you were required to familiarize yourself with the law governing contractors' licenses.
Yes, I am.
Okay, and you're required to familiarize yourself with the CLB's rules and regulations?
Yes.
And are you familiar with the different types of licenses that the CLB issues?
Yes, I am.
Okay, and could you explain, my understanding is that there are different license classifications. There's general engineering, general building, and a specialty licenses. Am I characterizing that correctly?
Yeah, that is the different licenses that is covered under the public law and also the rules and regulations.
Okay. And the specialty license classification also has different sub-classifications, is that correct?
Yeah.
Okay. And is one of those the C-68 telecommunications license?
Yes, it is a specialty classification under C-68.
Okay, can you just describe generally, I guess, the differences between the general engineering, the general building, and a specialty? And I know it's kind of a big umbrella for all of them, but is there a way that you can, I guess, help us understand the basic differences?
On the general engineering, it is mostly like a civil work, as we describe it, you know, like roads, bridges, parking lots, retaining walls, mostly civil. We call that like a horizontal construction. And then on the B, it's the building, like commercial, residential, the one that goes up, that people, you know, reside. So that is what is covered under general building.
Okay, and how about specialty?
The specialty classifications, I believe the board members put that together for those that are not covered under the A and the B. So they put that under a specialty classification.
And there are a number of different specialty licenses. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. Off the top of your head, do you know how many there are?
On the C-68... Can I?
Yeah. So actually, I have a binder in front of you, Ms. Bailey. I have a binder in front of you. It has an exhibit in there under tab 9. I'm looking at, yeah, there you go, it says rules and regulations. Are you familiar with this document?
Yes, I am.
Okay.
Yes, I am familiar.
Okay, and what is this document?
This is the rules and regulations of the Contractors License Board.
Okay, and this is one of the documents that you testified earlier that you're required to be familiar with and understand, right?
Yes.
Okay. And you can go ahead and direct us to the different licenses in that document. Okay. Just to make sure we're on the same page, are you on page 11?
Yeah.
Okay. So the page before that, or sorry, two pages before that, it says general engineering contractor, and then it has general building contractor, and then specialty contractor, and then there are different, I guess, types of licenses under each one. If I can direct you to the specialty contractor. And can you just tell us how many specialty contractors' licenses there are? Well, just licenses. I understand the C16 telecommunications license has a number under it, but.
Yeah, they're assigned a number. Every specialty is assigned a number.
Okay. And it says that the rules and regs provide for. Is it 68 different types of special licenses?
Because some of it are like, they skipped it from...
Oh, I see.
52 was omitted, and then it came to 58, which is the last of the specialty, and then they have declassified, and they put it under the C68. There are no numbers for the C68. It's just the description of the temporary classification that that they had given on this specialties.
Okay, yes, understood. I see that. Okay, so under the specialty licenses, there are different types of licenses, correct?
Correct.
Okay, and there are different, I guess, types of work that are involved for each of the licenses?
It's correct.
Okay. And the C68 itself has even more specialized, I guess, categories of licenses. Is that correct?
It's correct.
Okay. Can you tell us what type of work does a C68 telecommunications license cover?
Well, it covers... A telecommunication specialty is a communication telecommunication contractor that installs, services, repairs, and maintains all types of communications. These systems include, but are not limited to, telephone systems, sound systems, cable television systems, closed circuit video systems, satellite dish antenna, computer repair, computer networking, and data system. And the associated cabling, wiring, or fiber optics.
Are you familiar with the process for obtaining a C68 telecommunication license?
On the telecommunication, this is mainly for, say, if it's in a computer, we will just get a special, you know, like on the computer. Then this one involves also electrical work. Or the infrastructure that goes with it, because it could be wired or wireless. But then the infrastructure is, of course, plugged into a power with electrical power into that. So that's why, although it's like a movable kind of, like the computers, they are movable, but then the infrastructure are built into the building. So that's why it's still classified under, like, a construction work.
Okay. And are you aware of if there are consequences if an individual or a company performs this type of work that you just described without a C68 telecommunications license?
Yes, because a contractor that are licensed under this particular specialty, they should know how to install, how to test, and how to maintain the equipment that they are installing, and of course, like the repair. So if they are not qualified, then of course it will be not beneficial to the consumers because the work that they're going to be doing is not going to be according to the code, you know, that is being required. Like to power, say, a computer, you need to have a box and outlet, you know, and stuff like that. So if these contractors are not qualified, it could create, like, damage, you know. And as I said, because the consumers are the one that's going to pay for this project that they will be doing, so it's not going to be beneficial to the consumers.
Okay, so one of the, I guess, objectives of the CLB is to ensure that consumers, I think from what you're testifying, is one of your objectives is to ensure that consumers are protected from unqualified individuals who may be trying to perform contract work.
That is the number one role of our agency, is to protect the public.
Okay. And in that evaluation, the way that you do that evaluation is through the granting of licenses. Is that correct?
Yes, it is.
Okay, and in granting those licenses, there's a process by which someone has to get those licenses, correct?
It is a process. We have an application, and there are requirements that you have to submit in order for you to qualify to become a contractor and for the field or the specialty that you are applying for.
Okay, so it's the CLB's position that it is important that anyone who wants to perform contract work in Guam meet the qualifications that are set forth under the Contractor's License Board.
Yes, it's correct.
Okay. Do you know what the consequences? Are there fines? Are there, I don't know, reprimands that the CLB can issue if someone is performing work without having a proper license by the Contractor's License Board?
Yes. Under Public Law 30-11, it's there that licenses are required, and then those that are in violation can also be given. There's a violation penalty also that comes with that public law that we impose, you know, if we have unlicensed contractor that we caught, you know, doing work without obtaining a license from our office.
Okay, and this governs all work that is to be done on Guam. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. If an individual has a specialty license and they perform different types of work under the specialty sub-classifications, do they have to have the different licenses for each type of work that they perform?
There are works that are incidental to a particular specialty.
Mm-hmm.
For example, if you are a general builder, then you can also do plumbing, electrical, because of course the building or the house you can adjust it without completing those specialties. So for example, let's say telecommunication, since this is connected to the power source, the computer should be connected to a power source in order for the computer to operate. If the value of the work is not more than 35%, then you don't need to have a C13, which is electrical. It is like an incidental work only. But if the value of that electrical improvement is more than 35% of the work, then you need to get the C-13 license.
And typically, if there's questions about, you know, what kind of license you may need to hold, is it common for people to call the Contractor's License Board office and just inquire about what license they may need?
Yes, it's very common because we also have, there's also a law that we have to publish also the list of licensed contractor every year. So some of them, if they cannot find it in our listing or in the website, then they would call our office.
Okay. So if they weren't sure if they needed a C-68 telecommunications license versus a C-15, they could call your office and you guys would help them through this process?
Yes.
Okay. Are you familiar with the term responsible management employee?
Yes, I am.
Okay. And what is a responsible management employee?
The responsible management employee is the person that is licensed by our agency to be overseeing the work that's being done for the project that they are licensed or had a permit, to perform. And then the responsible management employee should be present, should be in the island, while during the duration of the project. So if any problems or anything that happens during the period where the project is ongoing, the responsible management employee is the person that will serve our notices because they are the one that has a license from our office.
And so would you say it's important for a contractor to have an RME for their project?
Yes, it is. It is the number one requirement for a contractor to have an RME.
Okay. And in order for a person to be designated as an RME, do they have to be a bona fide employee of the contractor?
It states in the rules, yes.
Okay. And under the CLB's rules and regulations, is it your understanding that both the RME and his or her employer have to be licensed separately? Is that correct? So under the CLB's rules and regulations, the RME itself, as well as the company that employs them, they both have to have the licenses. Is that correct?
It's correct.
Okay. Do you know of any consequences under the rules and regs, or if a contractor performs work without a duly licensed RME?
Yes, that would be like they will be considered probably unlicensed because the license is not transferable. It should be whoever the RME that that was given that license will be the one that should be in charge, not like the president or vice president of a business. Like you have a corporation, you have your president. But the RME is the one that supervised the work. So the company could be licensed with that RME. And if that particular person or whoever in that corporation is performing the work without notifying the RME, then that person will be considered as an unlicensed contractor.
Thank you, Ms. Bailey. Are you familiar with, or let me check that. Do you recall the CLB receiving a consumer complaint from G4S with respect to technology, the company called Technologies for Tomorrow?
Yes, I'm aware.
Okay. And did you have any roles or responsibilities or involvement with respect to that complaint?
Well, I assigned the complaint to one of our investigators, Mr. Andrew Mesa. I told him to follow our SOP, so we prepared the notice to appear to EFT, or Technologies for Tomorrow, but then they didn't have an office in Guam. So the investigator Richard tried his best to reach out to them, and I think they found in the website a way to contact them. And so it was sent by email, and it was confirmed that they don't have an office in Guam. So we continue our investigation, and we went to the Revenue and Taxation. And the only thing that we found was that they have a business license, but they are not licensed contractor.
Okay. And if I can direct you to tab 8. On the top, it says Contractors License Board. It's dated November 1st, 2021. Are you familiar with this document, Ms. Bailey?
Yes, I am.
Okay. And in the first part, can you just tell us what this document is?
Oh, this is the consumer complaint form?
No, she's on the wrong side.
I'm on the wrong side, sorry.
Here. It's marked tab 7.
Tab 7?
No. It's...
Tab
8. It's, the problem is these things are marked different from the appellant's exhibit. So go to the one with the white 7.
7?
I mean the white 8.
I only have the exhibit 6.
It's right up. It should be right up.
Yeah. No, there. That's it.
Exhibit 7.
Okay. On the top, it says Contractor's License Board, and it's dated November 1st, 2021. Is that the document that's in front of you?
Yes, it is.
Okay. And are you familiar with this document?
Yes, I am familiar with the document.
Okay. Can you tell us what this document is?
Document is the findings and decisions that was signed by our director regarding this case, case number 2021-0903, which is G4S versus Technologies for Tomorrow.
Okay, and in the first big paragraph, it says, your complaint alleges the following: indoor and outdoor wireless local area network WLAN infrastructure installation project. Are you familiar generally with what that project is?
I think this is the IFB IFBO
26-2021. Okay. And I believe you testified earlier that you had assigned the complaint to Andrew Mesa, and did you, but I believe you also testified that you were involved in the investigation of the complaint. And so based on your discussions with Andrew Mesa, what was your understanding of the work that was required by the GDOE bid?
It was the installation of the wireless network computers for the different Department of Education schools.
Okay, and as part of this investigation, do you know what materials Mr. Mesa was reviewing to investigate the complaint?
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what materials, what documents he was looking at to investigate the complaint?
Okay, I think... I'm not sure if they have submitted. There is no attachment because when we received the complaint, first of all, we wanted to know if the respondent is a licensed contractor to perform this kind of work. So what we did was just to conduct our investigation the status of the technologies for tomorrow is what kind of license they have. And the only thing that we found was that they only have a license from the revenue and taxation, and they don't have a license with our office. So we went ahead and contacted them. I think Mr. Mesa contacted I think the name of the person is Coco, that responded, and they said that they are only doing sales and retail of computer and only on special orders and no storage. So basically, they have a business license, but they don't have a contractor's license.
Okay. So they don't have a C-15 license with a contractor's license for it. TFT does not.
Not even any kind of license at all. They only have revenue and taxation license that is, as mentioned here, they said it only has on special orders.
Okay. If I can direct you, Ms. Bailey, to tab 2. So the white tab here.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so all the way in the front. Tab 2.
No, all the way to the front.
Yeah, the front of the...
Okay, what tab are we?
Tab 2.
2?
Okay.
It's the first time for me to testify, so I'm a little virgin. What is that? Tab 2?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Can you just, there are numbers at the bottom that start with the letter B?
Yeah.
Okay. And if you can start to D004. Okay, on the first, on the top, there says 2.1 and 2.2. Can you just read, you don't have to read it out loud, but if you could just read the second paragraph of 2.2 and second and third paragraph.
Second paragraph of 2.2?
Yes, and it starts with the WLAN installation.
Okay, so I'm very focused. The WLAN installation to expand.
I'm sorry, Ms. Bailey. You don't have to read it out loud. You can just read it to yourself, and then you can tell me when you're done.
Only the second?
You can read the second and the third one. So after reading that, would it be your position or your understanding that an individual who's performing this type of work would need a contractor's license from the town?
Objection calls for legal conclusion.
I'll allow she's an investigator that does that. Go ahead.
Okay. So based on the description, it says furnace and install required cables. See, it's already the cables, the conduits. Those are the the infrastructure. The infrastructure that comes with this computer, wireless computer, but it comes with the cables also, the conduits. So I guess it qualifies under the definition of contractor. That's the way I think.
Okay, so your testimony is that you would need a license from the Guam Contractors License Board to perform this type of work?
I believe so.
Okay. And is there a specific license that you would need under the specialty licenses to perform this type of work?
So since this is involving the computer, so it would fall under the C60.
The telecommunications license?
Telecommunication license.
Okay, thank you. And then if we can go back to tab 8, the document you were looking at earlier.
No, you look at the document after the 8, not the document. There you go.
Okay, and I think you testified to this earlier, but I just want to make sure. So this November 1st, 2021 letter, this was the findings and decision that the CLB had issued in response to G4S's complaint with respect to TFT. Is that correct?
Yes, correct.
Okay. And in this decision, findings and decisions, this states what you had testified earlier to, which is that TFT does not have a contractor's license on Guam. Is that correct?
Yes, it's correct.
Okay. And also that they only have a license for the sale of computer hardware and software based on your own research. Is that correct?
Yes, correct.
Okay. And based on those findings, what was the decision? I know the decision is stated here in this letter, but if you could just tell us, what was the decision of the CLB?
Well, the CLB decided that under 21 GC Area of Property, Chapter 70, Contractors 70108, no person within the purview of this chapter shall act or assume to act or advertise as general engineering, general building, or specialty contractor without a license previously obtained under and in compliance with this chapter and rules and regulation of the Contractor's License Board. And then the Contractor's License Board will find TFT in violation of this public law without obtaining a contractor's license. There was some language that was omitted to these findings, and it should. But
objection.
I cannot.
Objection.
I cannot. I'm sorry.
I'll.
Okay. So that is the findings that.
You hear what the objection was, though? Sorry. Just for the record.
Objection to her opining as to what the intent of the board was before they, what was omitted from this decision.
Thank you, Your Honor. Thank you, Mr. Johnson.
Okay, it's okay.
Okay.
Yeah, so mainly the decision was that they're supposed to have a license and they don't have a 68 license.
Okay. And just to be clear, if someone is going to contract to do the work on Guam, they themselves would have to have the license. Is that correct?
It is correct.
Okay. So even if they had a subcontractor, if they hired a subcontractor, it wouldn't matter. That they themselves would still have to have the license, even if the subcontractor had the license by the contractor.
They would be the prime, so of course they would be a contractor to be. In order for them to have a sub, they should get a prime, so they should have a contractor's license.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Bailey. I have no further questions.
Mr. Stake.
Hey, Ms. Bailey. My name is James Stake for GDOE. Some questions. So how long does it take to determine compliance with contractor's licenses?
What do you mean after we receive the complaint?
Yes.
Normally, if we don't have to, if there are no construction activities going on, you know, like, and looking only like if the contractor is licensed or unlicensed, then but in the normal process for all the complaints, we have like a 90 days to complete our investigation.
And then do CLB experts ever differ along the way as to which licenses apply?
To if the CLB officer?
I'm sorry. Do experts at your office ever differ in opinions as to licenses during the investigation?
Objection
made. I'll allow it.
If we
during an investigation, do CLB employees differ in opinions as to licenses during the investigation?
For the investigation section, I would say that we are in the same age because we follow the same rules and, of course, the law. There will be no differences. And they're our section. So I don't know if there are others, but I'm only talking about the investigation section, and we have the same interpretation.
And then
we have the same interpretation.
And then, so the CLB is the one that issues the final decisions for compliance with licenses, is that correct?
It is correct.
I'm sorry, for an investigator, is a license required? Do you have a license to be an investigator, or is there any requirements, prerequisites to become an investigator?
You mean the... Well, the job is, of course, being vetted by the Department of Administration in order for you to qualify for the position that you are applying for. So if you are appointed or you are hired, so you have the qualifications that they are looking for you to become an investigator.
And I'm sorry, so you said you were investigating for... consumers, does that include government agencies such as GMH or GDOE, GCC?
Consumers, any consumers, if they file a complaint to our office, if it's within our jurisdiction, yes, we are investigating.
And you don't need permission from other government agencies to conduct your investigations, is that correct?
Normally, we give them also notification if regarding our investigation.
And then, just lastly, how long does it take from, I guess generally, from application to issuance for a contractor's license?
According to the rules, it's 45 days. You have to issue a license to an applicant to obtain a license, right? You're asking me if you wanted to obtain a license. So if you have to follow the rules, if there was no any lockdowns or anything, 45 days, licenses should be issued within 45 days.
So after a CLB decision or finding, can a contractor, after the fact, then get this license? If the CLB decides, makes a decision that a license was missing?
They can submit, their application,
okay.
And we can review it.
Thank you. That's all for Geely.
Thank you, Your Honor. Hello, ma'am. My name's Joshua Walsh. I'm one of the lawyers working with one of the bidders of a company called Pacific Data Systems on this case. I have just a few questions, ma'am. Did I hear you correctly that if a contractor has a specialty license, they don't need to get an A or B license? Is that right?
Depending on what kind of project, if you are mainly doing a specialty, and then the scope of work is not more than 35% of that project that you are doing, then you can do the work like electrical. You don't have to have a C13 if the project is not more than 35%, according to our rules and regulations.
So there's no automatic rule that if you have an A, you don't need a specialty, or if you have a specialty, you don't need an A or B. It depends on the project. Is that fair to say?
Depends on the project, the scope of work of what you are trying to
do. Did I understand you to say that if you're plugging in the power, that contractor should have some license with the contracting licensing board?
You are the one that's going to provide for the power supply?
Sure.
Yes.
Okay. Can I, this is kind of related to Mr. Steak's question about the application process.
Mm-hmm.
Can I, do you have a problem with what I'm going to do here? I'm going to give you an example. Can I go to people, I'm just an attorney, I'm not a contractor.
Mm-hmm.
Can I go to people and sell to them the fact that I'm going to do construction work and make contracts with them and take their money and then apply for my license later? Is that okay in your view?
Objection, Your Honor. This is objection. That's going into procurement rather than just
No, it's not. The question was whether or not somebody could apply simply later for a license. I think the hypothetical is incomplete. In this situation, we have somebody offering construction services, so I want to know the COB's view on that.
Okay, I'll over.
Thank you, Your Honor. Can I sell construction work to people on Guam if I don't have a contractor's license?
Clearly, it's already a violation of the 7010 licenses required.
Right. So if I'm selling the construction work or telling people I can do it, I should have a license already. Is that correct?
You should have a license.
And ma'am, you remember earlier you were testifying about how sometimes contractors will call the CLB to ask about what licenses they may need for a job. Do you remember that testimony, ma'am?
I remember.
Can I ask who at the Department of Education called you people at the Contractors Licensing Board to help figure out what licenses they should specify for this project? Did you get any calls from DOE?
We haven't received any calls.
Do government of Guam agencies ever call the CLB to ask for your advice on how to write these specifications for what licenses should be required?
There are some government agencies that are calling us.
Some do?
Like if they're going to have a renovation or something, you know, they will ask if, you know, the contractor is licensed or not.
Just to find out if a contractor is licensed, okay.
Yes.
But do they ever call you ahead of time to help them figure out if licenses should be required? I'm just wondering if anybody calls
some,
you.
Some, yes.
They do?
They do.
But you don't recall DOE ever calling you in this situation, is that correct?
As far as I am concerned, I haven't received that call.
Do GovGuam agencies ever ask the CLB to help with, like, training so they can understand what licenses might be required for the procurements they do? They ever have that ever happen?
I think our executive director is reaching out.
So he's contacting them?
Yes. He's reaching out now because there are some, you know, of these things that are coming out. So we've talked about it, but, you know, yes. He's reaching out to, you know, for them to know that the CLB rules, you know, regarding contractors.
Thank you, ma'am. I appreciate your time. I have no further questions. Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Johnson.
Okay. Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm sorry, what was your last name again?
Name?
Your last name?
Bailey.
Bailey, okay. Ms. Bailey, my name is Morris Johnson. I represent TFT mm-hmm. in this matter. Can you tell me when the last CLB meeting was?
Last CLB meeting, I think we have it in August.
It was in August?
Yeah.
When was this letter issued? Sorry, the letter that's in Exhibit 8, I believe. Not Exhibit 8, it's Exhibit 7, the November, is this?
The one you have, it's right there.
The findings of facts. Sorry, it's Exhibit 7. It's the one to your left.
Yeah,
that one. That one right there. What's the date on? So, what is this letter again? What's it called?
This is findings and decision.
What's the date on this letter?
It's November 1st.
So, was there a hearing at the CLB before this letter was put out?
Actually, we did not bring this case to a hearing.
Can I ask why?
Because we did not find any license for the technologies for tomorrow.
Well, let me get an idea here of how things go then over at the CLB. You said when you first got the complaint, you assigned it to an investigator, yes?
Yes.
And that investigator's name was Andrew Mesa?
It's correct.
And you said that it's his responsibility to follow the SOP?
Yes.
Where are those SOPs?
You could find it in our website.
I'm on your website right now. Are those included in your rules and regulations?
Pardon, sir?
Are the SOPs part of your rules and regulations?
Oh, I think the SOP I'm talking about is how we investigate the complaint.
I understand. Are they part of the rules and regulations, though?
It's just like our office for investigation SOP, so that our investigators has, you know, something to follow.
So it's just sort of your rules that you follow in-house, then?
Well, the rules is it was the board that, you know, created the rules and regulations, and they have the SOP from our investigation section when we receive a complaint.
Okay. So, Exhibit 8, which is, I think, the next exhibit in your packet. Those are the rules and regulations for the CLB, right?
Correct.
Okay. So these SOPs that you're talking about, they're not part of this document, are they?
It is the our sections, like a process, like a flowchart,
mm-hmm.
when we conduct the investigation for the complaints that we receive, so to make sure that it's being done uniform.
I understand that, but my question is, those SOPs are not included in this document, are they?
It's not, because the board is the one that's responsible for the rules.
Okay. So, are you familiar with the standard operating procedures for consumer complaints?
Yes.
Okay. So the first step is to receive the copy of the complaint that's filed, is that right?
Right.
The next step is to log in that complaint and assign a case number?
Yes.
Did you do this, or did Andrew Mesa do these two steps?
I did it.
Okay. Then you forward the complaint to a supervisor director who will assign it to an investigator?
Mm-hmm.
And that's when you assigned it to Andrew Mesa?
I assigned it to him.
And the next step is to open a file?
Yes.
And the file number, or case number in this one, is 2021-9-3.
It's good.
Then the investigator assigned will examine the alleged violations. Is that right?
Yes.
Then the investigator will send a notice to appear to the contractor?
Correct.
And that was sent to TFT?
Yes.
Okay. If job site visit is necessary, the investigator will advise the contractor and the consumer within 10 working days of the scheduled time and date.
Yes.
No job site visit was done here, though.
Because we found, Mr. Mesa mentioned that the company is off island.
Understood. So if the investigator concludes that the allegations have no merit, the consumer and contractor will be notified in writing with findings and recommendations, and the case is closed.
Yes.
Okay. And that didn't happen here.
I believe on the decision that was signed by the director, we did not close the case because according to Mr. Mesa, the project is not awarded yet.
Oh, so it's not a final decision then?
The final decision would be probably when the project will be awarded.
Okay. Well, looking at these SOPs again, though, it looks like that on number 9, if there are any violations of the rules and regulations, a citation will be issued to the contractor stating the nature of the violation and the penalty. The contractor can either pay the penalty and correct the violation or can contest the citation. Now, was a citation issued here?
Yes. We did not issue the citation due to the fact that the project has not awarded yet.
So where in these standards of procedures is the step that you took?
Pardon me?
What did you do instead of these two things? It seems you can either conclude that the allegations have no merit or issue a notice to correct. Those are the two options under the standards of procedures.
So I believe that's why the case is still open, because there was no... we did not see in the business license that they are advertising for construction or what. They're just saying that they are only doing retail.
So please finish your fishing answer.
So I guess that was the basis for the decision that we cannot close the case until the project is awarded.
So, but you still issued this findings and decisions, though, on November 1st, right?
Yes, it's issued by our director.
And finding number two is that TFT is in violation of Public Law 21 GCA 70108A.
Yes.
And you reached this decision, sorry, the director and the COB reached this decision without a hearing.
As I said, the case was not brought to a hearing because it was trying to find out if the contractor has a contractor's license or not. So it was found out that they don't have a contractor's license.
Did you issue a notice of hearing?
Yes, we did.
You issued a notice to appear?
There was a notice to appear that was issued by Andrew Mesa, and according to him, he talked to Coco and he sent it to him.
When did you issue your notice of hearing?
But they're off island, so they cannot appear. What was issued on October 5th?
The notice of hearing was issued on October 5th?
Yes. And it's supposedly, they're supposed to appear on the 7th.
Who is it addressed to?
It's addressed to Technologies for Tomorrow, 1106 North Avenue, Pensacola, Florida.
Was it mailed to them?
Mr. Mesa had emailed it to them.
So it was emailed to them, it wasn't mailed to them?
Because we cannot find them. The only way for me, for the investigator to, I think the only... way that the investigator was able to contact them was through their website.
Are you familiar with the administrative hearing requirements under the administrative adjudication law?
Your Honor, if I may make an objection as to the relevance here for a moment. It appears like Technologies for Tomorrow has some concern over the process of the Contractors Licensing Board that issued an exhibit that we have before the OBA today. I'm not quite sure what the relevance is about trying to turn over an administrative decision from this body when this body has would have no jurisdiction to reverse what the CLB did. I would think if the Technologies for Tomorrow wants to conduct discovery or do some investigation or attack some issuance by the CLB, a better form to do that would be before the CLB. I'm not quite sure what the relevance is to that.
It's very relevant to our hearing. I'm going to overrule your objection. I want to hear whether or not, because this thing was submitted, and it was the basis of, I believe, a tirade that I had at one hearing of why wasn't, and I now know that there's an SOP online that requires certain things. If it wasn't followed, I need to know that, to know whether or not my tirade was appropriate that time, or whether or not this was issued or not issued correctly.
Understood, Your Honor. Thank you.
Are you familiar with the administrative adjudication law?
Yes.
Does the CLB follow the administrative adjudication law with respect to hearings?
For a hearing?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, we do.
Okay, was an accusation issued to TFT?
I believe we did not go further as far as issuing, like, a hearing or what, because the investigator received a response from DFT that they are off island.
Okay. So if I can, and please correct me if I'm wrong. So your investigator issued this notice of hearing.
It's a notice to appear.
So it's a notice to appear.
Yes.
So it's not a notice of hearing.
It's not a notice of hearing
okay.
yet.
So no accusation was issued to TFT.
We did not issue the accusation.
No hearing was conducted.
We did not conduct a hearing.
Okay, so TFT wasn't allowed to submit witnesses to testify at a hearing in front of the CLB. Is that true?
It is true.
Okay, so CLB didn't get to issue, submit exhibits before the CLB in a hearing.
Not sure if you can spell TFT.
Sorry, TFT. Were they allowed to issue, to introduce exhibits at any hearing before the CLB?
I'm sorry, but we did not go that far to have a hearing because of the location.
Understood. Understood.
They are off island.
When's the last time there was a hearing in front of the CLB?
Did not go to a hearing.
Oh, I'm not talking about this case. When's the last time in any case was there a hearing in front of the CLB?
I believe June or July.
Okay. And the last meeting of the CLB was in August?
Yes.
Okay.
May,
and
June.
This complaint was filed in September, yes? Exhibit 6.
The complaint was received on September 20.
Okay. So between the time this complaint was received and the time the decision in order, sorry, the time the complaint was received in September 17th
mm-hmm.
of this year.
Right.
And the time that the notice, sorry, the findings and decisions was issued on November 1st.
Right.
There was never any meeting of the CLB.
We don't have there was no board meeting. We only have a board meeting once a month.
Okay.
The last board meeting we had in August, we have agenda for the other cases that we have. And we could not move forward because there was a new mandate how to conduct the open government law.
Sure. Regardless of that, though, you still issued this decision on November 2, right? Sorry, November 1.
Yes, it was issued by our director.
When did that discussion take place? About the merits of these findings?
I'll rule the objection. I need to know. Was there a hearing or anything? How did the director come to this decision?
We did not conduct a hearing on this decision, as I said, because when we served the notice to appear, and then the respondent is off island, we cannot, they're not physically here. So when we did investigation under license, we got their license from Revenue and Taxation, and they are licensed for retail, and they are not licensed as a contractor.
What I'm really getting at here is what discussions took place to write this findings and decisions, and who was there for those discussions, and when did that take place?
As in our SOP, after we conducted the investigation, so we did a conclusion that the technologist is not a licensed contractor.
Okay.
So that was just a decision that was made by our director.
Who wrote this letter? The text in this letter?
It was actually the findings by the investigator, because he's the person that is really assigned to it.
Okay.
And as a supervisor, of course, I have to verify his findings.
And who wrote the decisions then?
And the decision was and it was signed by our executive director.
So who wrote the decision part, though?
Pardon?
Who wrote the decision part? You said the findings were written by the investigator and you. Who wrote the decision part?
It was both consulted to our executive director on the decision.
Okay, but you don't know. Do you know when that happened?
As of now, I cannot really give you the date when it happened.
Okay. And I just want to point out one thing, though, too. In this decision's on the second page, does the decision, do they mention the IFB on the decision at any point here? Exhibit
7.
It's tab 8, appellant's exhibit 7.
Yes, so the decision was signed by our executive director.
Yes, ma'am. But point one in the decision, the first paragraph, does that mention this invitation for bid specifically?
It's not mentioned, but the case number, this is regarding the decision regarding this case number?
Sure. But this invitation for bid is not mentioned in the decision at all, the decision portion.
Because the complaint, they based the decision on the complaint.
So it seems to me that this decision only takes into account whether or not TFT had a C-68 communications telecommunications license.
Or a license. Any kind of contractor's license, for that matter.
So this decision doesn't discuss whether or not a C-68 license is required for this IFB, does it? As written.
The way I understand it, it's any kind of license.
It doesn't discuss whether any license is required for this.
Because it says 70108.
Mm-hmm. So,
whether it is building, whether it is engineering, whether it is a specialty, you need to have a license.
So any kind of work you want to do, you have to have a license?
Construction.
Any construction work specifically?
Yes.
Okay. Let's discuss something else. Let's go to the rules and regulations. That's Exhibit 8. If you could go to C-68.
It's Exhibit 8, but it's White 9.
Okay, now C-68 is classified specialist, right?
Yes.
Okay, now we focused so far on the subclassification, which is communications/telecommunications, which is on the next page, but don't turn there. What I would like to discuss is the paragraph right below C-68, where it says temporary classifications under C-68. Do you see that? Can you read that paragraph?
The Contractor's License Board temporarily classifies the following list of specialists under C-68 in accordance to Part 4 of the CLB Rules and Regulations.
That says Part 4 of the CLB Rules and Regulations, yes?
Yes.
And this includes, this list of temporary classifications includes on the next page, communications/telecommunications, right? Okay, well, let's go look at Part 4. That's on page 6. Sorry, page 8 of this document. So it seems to me that there should be some authority for the director or the CLB to specify temporary subclassifications. Does that sound right?
It's the board there.
The board has that authority. Mm-hmm. And that authority is in Part 4.
Yes.
Okay, let's go look at Part 4. What's Part 4 called?
Experience qualification.
Okay, now could you read through 4.1, 4.2, and 4.3, which appear to be the only three paragraphs in Part 4, and can you tell me which section discusses the authority of the CLB to issue temporary classifications.
I think this is pertaining to when you obtain a license.
That's what I thought. Is there anything in there that says that gives the authority to the CLB to issue these temporary classifications then?
I think it's under public law, powers and duties of the board.
Can you show me?
It's public law 30-70103. Powers and duties of the board.
Sure, where does it say that? Where does it say that?
It says here that powers and duties of the board, in addition to any other duties, powers granted by this chapter, the contractor's license board shall grant licenses to contractors pursuant to this chapter, may amend or repeal such rules and regulations as it may deem proper to fully fit with this chapter and carry out the purpose thereof, which purpose is for the protection of the general public.
So which portion of it allows the board to issue temporary classifications that are not adopted by rule and regulation?
It says here that they have the power to make the rules, so I guess this is the rules and regulations that were created by the board.
When were they promulgated?
Was promulgated.
Thank you. I have just one more thing I'd like to discuss. You opined on the section, I think it was page G004. Of the IFB. Page G004 of the IFB. Can you turn back there? You said that, in your opinion, you would need a C-68 communications telecommunications license to do this project. Are you familiar with communications or telecommunications?
Technically, those are like technical issues, but I'm only depending on what is the definition of the specialty that was created by the board.
Okay. And you said during your direct examination that the board decides the cases, right? You don't decide the cases, do you?
I don't decide.
Okay. Thank you. No further questions.
Redirect.
Thank you, Ms. Bailey. Thank you for your patience. I want to go back to your earlier testimony with Mr. Johnson about the SOPs of the CLB, and just maybe flesh out a little bit the findings and decisions of the CLB. I think you testified, and the document says that the complaint by G4S is still open. That's your understanding, correct?
That was the decision that was signed by our executive director.
Okay, so it's not considered closed, as it states, is one of the, I guess, procedures under the CLB standard operating procedures, correct? Okay. So if the matter was closed, is that when, or any matter, when the matter is closed, is that when the CLB issues the notice to correct and the notice of hearing, assuming there's a violation?
Yes, when we did, when we finished with, if we have issued, if we have found a violation and we have issued a citation, and that's when, and if it's corrected, then that's when we can close the case.
Okay, my understanding based on your testimony is that one of the reasons why it's still open is because there hasn't been a contract of the, or there hasn't been an award or a contract of the work. Is that correct?
There was the decision.
Okay, so if GDOE was to enter into a contract with TFT, would the CLB then, let me add another fact, if GDOE is to enter into a contract with TFT and TFT is not licensed by the Law Contractors License Board, would the matter then, the complaint then be closed by the CLB?
Then we have to reopen the case and then bring it to the board
for the violation. Okay, so at that point, that's when you would issue the notice to appear and the notice of correction. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. So the work that you did as part of this investigation, that was all pursuant to these SOPs that we're talking about, correct?
Like issuing a notice to appear again?
Yes.
Or
well, the notice. I'm sorry. Let me be specific. The notice to correct and the notice of hearing.
The notice of hearing. Yes. Maybe that will be the time that we will issue the statement of accusation because there is a violation.
Okay. And that was the. And as part of the investigation, it was clear, based on your research, right, that TFT didn't have the contractor's license with the CLB. Is that correct?
There was the document that we gathered from the Department of Revenue and Taxation.
I think you suspect earlier that Mr. Mesa attempted to contact Mr. Coco. Did the CLB have any communications with TFT about this license issue?
We have. Okay. There are emails that between Coco and Mr. Andrew Mesa.
Okay. And do you know what those communications included or what they were?
They said that there was no award yet, and then if in the event they will get the work, then they will subcontract it, and they can even provide us the names of their subcontractor. But until the project is awarded, they cannot provide their subcontractor.
Okay. But they didn't say that they themselves were going to get a license. Is that correct? No. No.
I did not. See that, you know, they said they will get the license.
Okay.
They only said that they're going to hire subcontractors.
Okay. But just to go back, I guess, to your prior testimony, if they were the prime contractor for work performed on one, they themselves would have to get the license from the Contractor License Board, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Bailey. I have no further questions.
Mr. Stewart?
Just one. Are you certified in procurement? Did you take the GCC modules?
I'm sorry. I am not certified for...
procurement.
What for that again?
Procurement.
Procurement. Oh. No, I am not. I think in our office, the administration section is the one that are being certified for the procurement.
Okay. Thank you.
I have no questions, Your Honor. Thank you.
No questions.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you. You did very well for your first time.
I know you
were a little, and I was a little rough, but you did very well. Thank you. Who's your next witness?
Mr.
He's downstairs.
No, I was going to call Ms. Sharp first.
Oh, okay, because there's somebody sitting downstairs waiting.
Yeah, so we have additional people from the CLB, but I don't believe I will need to call them, and I did inform them about that I would probably likely just call Ms. Bailey, but I wasn't sure if the other council would need to call them.
Okay, so I know we're working late because I need to go to class, so let's take Ms. Charfers and the witnesses downstairs. Can we just excuse them because they're wondering?
I agree with that, Your Honor.
Yes,
I don't think we need anything else in the CLB.
And if anybody's going to, they're going to have to re-subpoena them, whoever, if you need any of them. Okay? So we'll send notification down. Thank you very much. And we'll take Ms. Charfers.
Okay, thank you.
Have a good lunch.
Okay.
Do you solemnly swear or affirm that the testimony you're about to provide is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes.
Thank you, Ms. Charfers. You're employed by the Guam Department of Education, is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay, and your title is the Supply Management Administrator?
Yes, it is.
Okay, and can you just describe what are your roles and responsibilities as
My roles and responsibilities with the department is to oversee all procurement that comes through GDOE.
Okay, thank you.
And whether it be RFQs, RFPs, IFBs, that's my role.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Charfers. And if I may ask, if you just let me finish my question first before your response.
Apologies.
Yeah, just so there's...
I'm nervous. This is my first time here.
Yeah, don't be nervous, and please take your time. I just want to make sure, because it is being recorded, and so I want to make sure we're not talking over each other.
Understood.
And I will do... I'll try my best to do the same for you. Okay, thank you. So I just want to jump straight into the IFP that's at issue. So it's safe to say that you're familiar with IFP 2621, is that correct?
Yes.
Okay, and what were your roles and responsibilities with respect to IFP 2621?
My roles and responsibility is overseeing the procurement process.
For the specific IFP?
For all IFPs.
Okay, thank you. And can you just, maybe just generally, what does that mean that you oversaw it? What can you give us examples of work that
you... So when the scope of work is put together, my responsibility is to oversee it prior to it being publicized.
And then, I'm sorry, go ahead.
And then once it's publicized, we give a time frame of when it's due. Bids are submitted, we review it, and we go over it based off of the requirements by the IFP.
Okay. Did you have any roles or responsibilities with respect to the drafting of the IFP?
We do put the scope together, but it's based off of the needs of our end user.
Okay. And so when you say we, that includes you, is that correct?
Myself, yes. And, of course, my procurement officials in my office.
Okay. And the IFP that we're talking about, just so we're all clear, that is in the exhibit finder before you. That's what starts as G001, is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. I know that you've been sitting in on the testimony, so you've heard what has already been testified about. But prior to this hearing, were you aware of whether TFT, and I'm going to call them TFT Technologies for tomorrow, were you aware whether they had a contractor's board license?
It wasn't a requirement of our IFB, so therefore we didn't care. We didn't ask.
Okay, so I'm going to strike that whole answer that was non-responsive. My question is yes or no. Were you aware, was GDOE aware, of whether TFT had a contractor's license?
The answer is no.
Okay. Has GDOE ever inquired with TFT about whether it had a license with the contractor's license board?
The answer is no.
Okay. Has GDOE ever inquired with the contractor's license board about whether TFT has a license?
Our procurement division did not, but our end user did.
I'm sorry, who's your end user?
That would be our FSAIS team,
okay,
which is the end user who assisted in providing the scope of work.
Okay, so your end user inquired.
Which is FSAIS.
Okay, so they inquired with the CLB about whether TFT had a license to the contractor.
Correct.
Okay, and did, based on the inquiry, they found out that TFT did not have a license, is that correct?
I did not follow through with our end user on whether or not they responded back.
Okay. And GDOE has previously entered into a contract with TFT before, correct?
That is correct.
Okay, can you tell us what that contract is?
We have multiple contracts with TFT, whether it be with computer, providing equipment, computer supplies, and I forgot that other one. I can't recall off the top of my head. I oversee a lot of IFEs. There's several.
Understood. So in those prior contracts, did GDOE ever ask TFT for proof that they had a contractor's license?
No, ma'am.
Okay, did they ever ask TFT if they had a business license for services with the Department of Revenue and Taxation?
They provided their business license,
okay,
in their submission.
Okay. And are you aware that that business license was only for the sale of equipment and not for services?
I was not aware.
Okay. Are you, as the supply management administrator, are you involved at all in reviewing the bids that come in?
Yes.
Okay. And so I think you testified that you're aware that TFT does not have a contractor's board license. And so because...
I testified because I said it wasn't a requirement.
Well, I also struck that entire answer because it was non-responsive. And just to hone it in, you did testify that you were not aware whether TFT had a contractor's business license, right? And so my question is, do you know if TFT did not actually submit proof that it had a contractor's license with its bid submission, correct?
That is correct.
Okay. And because TFT did not submit proof that it had a contractor's license with its bid for this procurement, that was not part of GDOE's evaluation of the bid. That's correct?
Correct.
Okay. So it's not something that the evaluators would have considered when it reviewed TFT's bid, correct?
Correct.
Okay. And obviously they wouldn't consider it if they didn't know about it, correct?
Correct.
Okay.
It's not that they didn't know. It was a requirement of our amendment. The amendment went out, so there was a change.
Okay, which amendment are you referring
to? Amendment, 4.
Okay, understood. If we can go to the IFB that's in front of you, and if you could turn to page 21. I'm sorry, it's base stamp SG 021. Oh, it's actually page 21 as well. At the top of the document, it says 3.2.2.
Correct.
Determination of responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And can you just read that first sentence?
Responsibility of the bidder will be determined in accordance with 2GAR Division 4, 3116.
Okay. Are you familiar with the factors that are listed in 2GAR Division 4, Section 3116?
It's been a while. I always have to refer back to my regulations whenever there's a decision that needs to be made.
Okay.
The regulations, Chapter 3, is a really huge section of the procurement law.
Yeah, understood. Did GDOE consider, well, I know that maybe as you sit here today, you don't know all those factors, but did GDOE consider these factors as was required in the IFP when it made its determination of responsibility?
Based on all the requirements and based off all the regulations, procurement regulations, we abide by what's required.
Okay, so if I represented that one of those factors includes being qualified legally to contract with the territory, is it your testimony that GDOE considered that factor in its determination of responsibility?
If I'm not mistaken, TFT is licensed to do business on farm.
Okay, but they have a license for the sale of equipment, correct?
Correct.
Okay, and this IFP is not does not concern the sale of equipment, correct?
That's correct.
Okay, this IFP actually is calls for services to be provided, correct?
Correct.
Okay. And can you just, maybe we could flesh out it out a little bit more then. So what information from TFT was considered by GDOE in making the responsibility determination?
Based off of their submission under the IFP.
Okay, so everything that they submitted.
Correct.
That's it. Okay. Did GDOE ever, actually, let me strike that. Step back a little bit. In performing its evaluation, or during the time that it was performing its evaluation and determination of responsibility, did GDOE ever ask any of the bidders about whether it had the required licenses to perform the work?
It's my understanding that it's the responsibility of the vendors who submit under the IFP to provide the licenses required to do the IFBs.
Okay. But GDOE did not consider whether TFT was licensed by the COB to perform any of the work as part of this bid.
That's correct.
Okay. I think you testified earlier that you... as part of your job duties that you did review the bids, correct?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, and so you're familiar with TFT's bid submission, correct?
Yes, but if you're going to ask me to point to a certain section, I have to take a look at the bid because, like I said, I review a lot of IFBs.
Yeah, understood. Okay, well, let me ask you one question, and if you don't know the answer, we'll get it out. Does that work?
That's fine.
Okay.
That's fair.
Okay. As far as you're aware, and again, you can look back at the documents if you need to, but TFT did not identify a company called LP Ganaches Enterprises Inc. DBA Radiocom in its bid, correct?
If I'm not mistaken, it's a confidential. Am I right?
I'm sorry. What do you mean?
Like I said, it's been a while.
Okay.
So if I'm not mistaken, their bid documents, there are certain things in the IFB that's kept confidential.
Are you testifying that the identities of a subcontractor is confidential information?
Nothing's been awarded, correct? Under the IFB, it's certain things are kept confidential.
Okay, why don't we turn to the bid submission?
Could you tell me what section?
Yeah. If you could look at G299.
Okay, and your question, ma'am?
Yes. Okay, so on G299 and G300, actually all the way to 302, are you familiar with this document?
The technical submission, yes.
Okay. And in this document, TFT is identified themselves as a prime contractor. Do you see the mention of LP Ganaches Enterprises, Inc., DBA, Radiocom in any of these pages here?
No, ma'am, I don't.
Okay.
I do not see it.
Okay, but you see at the top that they do identify NX Tech Systems, Aruba Technical Engineering Support Partner, correct?
What section are we talking about?
Page
G300. Yes, I do see that.
Okay. And on page G301, you see that they are identifying who their technical resources are, correct?
Yes.
Okay, and you don't see any mention of LP Ganaches Enterprises, Inc., DBA Radiocom, correct?
No, ma'am, I do not.
Okay. And just to go, if we could turn to earlier of the document, on page G019, at 3.1.11, the IFB prohibits any modification of bids prior to the time and date set for bid opening, correct?
3.1.11?
Yes.
The modification or withdrawal of bids?
Yep.
Okay. Bids may be modified or withdrawn by written notice received from the bidder prior to the time and date set for bid opening. Negligence from the bidder in preparing the bid confers no right for the withdrawal of the bid after it has been opened.
Okay, so my question is, just to confirm what that provision in the IFB states, which is that a bidder cannot modify their bid after bid opening, correct?
Yes.
I have no further questions.
Okay, just really quick to back up. This IFB was a multi-step, is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay, and just to clarify what you meant, there's an unpriced and a priced, is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay, so could you please clarify as to the confidential portion that you were talking about?
Under the multi-step, yes, those are supposed to be kept confidential until an award is made.
I'm sorry, no, to go back. The unpriced portion has its own process for to be confidential.
Yes, they have to. I'm sorry.
Yes.
They have to meet an evaluation. They have to go through an evaluation to the next step.
Okay. So, did TFT do the process for that, for this multi-step?
Yes, they did.
Okay, sorry. So, let's back up. Are you fully certified with the GCC procurement modules?
Yes, I completed all four modules.
Based on your training and your experience, I'm sorry, how many years' experience did you have with procurement?
I've been with DOE going on 12 years, but I've been the administrator for 7.
So, based on your training and your knowledge, are purchasing agencies permitted to create specifications for their services?
Yes, with the assistance of our end users who provide us the scope and needs of their division.
So yes.
Yes.
Okay. So then, can a during your time, do you receive protests as the DOE supply manager?
Yes, we do.
Okay. So, is it common for a protest to assert additional criteria after the fact, after they lost the award?
Yes.
I'm sorry, for the record, you have to...
I'm sorry, yes.
And then, based on your knowledge and your training and experience, can you add evaluation factors after the fact?
No.
So, just directly, was a contractor's license included in the published terms and conditions of IFB 26?
No.
Did bidders ask if a contractor's license was required for the evaluation award of the IFB?
In an amendment, yes.
And are all bidders required to acknowledge receipt of the amendment?
Yes. That is a requirement.
So, based on the IFB, how did you determine responsibility and responsiveness for this IFB?
When a vendor submits for an IFB, that's showing that they are responsible and willing to provide the services indicated in the IFB or the solicitation.
And then, on your, based on your knowledge and experience, does IFB 26 permit subcontracting?
Yes.
So in your professional opinion, was the IFB properly evaluated and awarded?
Yes.
I'm sorry. And then lastly, going to GDOE's Exhibit C, page 257. The GDOE's exhibits.
This one?
Page 257. Sorry, if, it, you know, if you can't find it, I'll just get straight to it. What does it indicate when TFT signed the bid form?
It indicates that they are going to provide the service as required under the IFB and that they are the authorized representative.
In your training for the GCC modules, was there any mention regarding having to include a contractor's license or anything in your study of the regulations?
I don't recall. I took those classes several years ago, I believe, when it first came out in 2013 or 14.
So is that a yes or no?
Yes.
I'm sorry, to clarify, does the law, are you aware of a law that requires a contractor's license for the IFB?
No.
No.
Am I still looking for this page?
No, you're fine. You're fine.
Okay.
So,
I know it's late, but I don't want any rushing, okay?
I don't.
I want to ask every single question. That's why I allowed as many people that are in here. Let me tell you, I need to understand what's going on. So please, take your time. If need be, we'll continue this out tomorrow. But I need for all of you to ask all the questions to inform me in order for me to make a reasoned decision.
Ms. Harper's. Do you feel comfortable making compliance decisions regarding contractors' licensing?
No, I do not.
Does your IFB 26 waive any laws or waive any requirements for these vendors?
No.
So could the, based on your experience and knowledge, could this law contractors' licensing board still investigate and enforce contracts and licenses?
The licensing board, that's their profession. I do not make judgments on contractor's license.
Have they ever reached out to you regarding an investigation?
No, except for that one memo that I received recently.
Is that a part of this appeal?
Yes.
Okay, so that was through by and through this appeal, is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. How about in the past? Has the Guam Contractors Licensing Board reached out or worked with you in any part of their investigations?
No.
So they have separately operated from DOE?
Yes.
Okay. I'm sorry, and then in your professional opinion, based on the IFB, was this properly evaluated and awarded?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. No further questions at this time.
Thank you, Your Honor. Hello, Ms. Charters. For the record, I'll say I'm Josh Walsh. I'm representing PDS, one of the bidders in this procurement appeal. Can I follow up a little bit on the trainings that you've taken for procurement? I understand you've completed all four modules. Is that the true for your buyers or all the buyers that may have worked on this procurement?
Yes.
Now, there's been a lot of testimony during your examination about how this bid does not say that a contractor's licensing board license is required, right?
Correct.
That's true. Can you tell me about the conversations that occurred at DOE when you made the decision that no CLB license was required? How did you make that decision?
So it's basically the off of the scope of work that was required
So is your testimony that you actually sat down and had a meeting where you discussed whether or not a CLB license would be needed, and your testimony is we decided it was not needed?
That's correct, sir.
When did that meeting occur?
Oh, it's not a meeting. It's just a discussion between myself and the buyer supervisor responsible.
And your testimony under oath is that you guys had a discussion and said no CLB license is needed.
Because it wasn't a requirement of the IFB.
I'm sorry. When you specified this project at the beginning when this was being put together, is your testimony that you and the end user had a conversation and discussed whether or not a contractor's licensee board license would be needed. Is that your testimony?
My testimony is it was just plugging in lines.
My question is...
We didn't know that there was a contractor's license that was needed.
You didn't know?
We didn't know.
So you didn't discuss it at all. Is that true?
No, sir, we did not.
I ask you to open that binder to G489? That's in
the black one?
Yes, ma'am, the DOE procurement record. It's the Amendment 4 you mentioned earlier in response to Mr. State. G489, the date stamp numbers at the bottom right of your procurement record. So at G489, Pacific Data Systems ask a question. It says, please confirm whether or not a GOMP contractor's license is required.
Okay.
Now, you see that area? Pacific Data Systems, it's number 8.
Okay.
You agree with me that you don't just say no there. I mean, there's this paragraph, but the answer is not no. Is that right?
Correct.
Now, if you're so confident that no licensing from the CLB was required for this, why not just say no? Why write 7 sentences and then finish with bidders are responsible to do the right thing? I mean, I'm paraphrasing the last sentence there. Why not just say no and avoid all of this confusion we now have?
The confusion is the fact that we had a protest because an individual or a business didn't have a contractor's license.
I'm sorry, ma'am. So you would agree with me that G489 is an amendment that appears before the protest, right?
Correct. And it says bidders are responsible to be informed and acknowledged of any regulatory requirements for this project.
So is that a yes?
It's a requirement on the bidders. It's their responsibility to provide.
Let's talk about responsibility for a moment, ma'am.
Yes, sir.
How do you make responsibility determinations in your procurement department in DOE? How does that process occur?
It's based off of the requirements under the GOMP procurement law.
Okay, and so how do you make your responsibility determinations?
If the bid submission is submitted based off all the GOMP procurement laws, then we award it by the evaluation and the requirements of the IFB.
So if I understood your testimony earlier, and I want to give you an opportunity to correct this. Your testimony earlier was that you make responsibility determinations based on the submissions in the bid packet. Is that your testimony?
If they provided it under the requirements of our IFB.
Okay, so if a company that's been debarred on the island of Guam submits to you a bid package that does not include the debarment, you're just going to ignore that? Is that what you're talking
about? No.
So then how do you make the responsibility determination?
Okay, so when a vendor submits their IFB, we have to go under the Sam's Club to make sure whether or not an individual has been debarred
So earlier when you said that you make your responsibility determination based on what's in the bid packet, that's not completely true. You do look elsewhere, is that
yes.
right? Okay,
under Sam's Club, yes.
So I want to know what
you're bringing up debarment.
I want to know what are the other elsewheres you look at.
That's about that I can recall. The only one that I can recollect is the debarment.
Okay. So your testimony is at DOE, you make responsibility determinations by looking at the bid packet and Sam's Club, whatever this is. Is that right?
The Sam's.
But nothing else?
That I recall.
And you think that is a fair, in your professional opinion, you think that's a fair way to make responsibility determinations on this island under the law?
Is that if it's a requirement and we abide by the rules and the regs, yes.
are, how does DOE make decisions on what bidders to notify regarding award notices?
Those who submit it.
Everybody who submits gets notice?
Under the IFB, yes. But if you're talking about a multi-step, sir, that process is a little different.
Okay. How?
Those people who qualified get notified.
So you won't tell...
That we're going to do a bid opening. That's under the multi-step.
So you will not tell somebody who is unqualified that they're
not
qualified?
They haven't qualified.
They get no notice?
Correct. But those people who are qualified will be the ones... to submit their price submission.
But if I've been determined to be unqualified by
you,
we
will notify you.
You will notify
me.
Yes,
sir.
So you do tell people.
Yes.
What's your policy on providing notice about appeals to the OPA? You provide notice to everybody?
We're supposed to put out a notice of stay, but this case it didn't happen because it's post award.
This is a post award appeal?
Correct.
Why is this a post-award appeal? What constituted the award here?
Because,
in your view?
I'm sorry. Strike that. I'm thinking of another. I'm talking about with PDS. Forgive me.
I'm sorry. No, I know PDS has a lot, ma'am. So, but you'd agree this is a pre-award appeal?
Yes.
Okay.
My apologies.
No problem. I think,
like I said, I handle so many procurements.
Yes. Who helps train, who provides the, who do you lean on? I don't want to get into particular lawyer conversations, but who do you rely on to help you understand what the law requires in these procurements? Who's providing the guidance to you over what the law requires about pre- or post-award or responsibility determinations?
I get the advisement of our legal counsel.
Is there anybody else?
No, sir.
You work with the Attorney General's office on this?
Yes, we do.
So when you said no, you meant yes. I mean, you said your legal counsel, and then I asked you if you get anybody else, and your answer was no.
Well, because they're site certified.
Okay, so when you say the Attorney General's office, you just mean your legal counsel at DOE.
Yes,
so there's
sir.
Nobody else.
Correct.
Okay. So your testimony is there's no other guidance from anybody else other than your in-house legal department over how to run these procurements?
In-house.
Okay.
I get my guidance. And, of course, our superintendent.
Thank you, ma'am. Nothing further, Your Honor.
Mr.
Chairman.
I just have a few questions. Is there anything in the IFB that requires requires each bidder to list every single subcontractor that they have?
It's everything in the IFB. It's there.
Just do.
Is there a requirement?
Yeah.
I don't recall, sir.
Okay. Thank you.
I have a few more questions.
I want to have one question, and all of you can have a chance to answer it. I was a little concerned because he was asking me about the responsibility. And I was concerned because when Mr. Steak asked about responsible, you said when the bidder submits, you assume that they're responsible because they've submitted.
And based on our requirements, sir, under the IFB.
You don't go through your own determination to determine responsibility. If I submitted, you would just, because I submitted?
No, sir.
What would you do?
We have a checklist. It's called a bid abstract. And so when the bidders submit, we go through that bid abstract to find out, first and foremost, if they qualified in certain areas. And then because this is a multi-step, we evaluate, we pre-qualify them, and then we have our end users and our procurement office evaluate based upon our technical requirements.
Thank you very much for giving me that answer, because I was ready to have a stroke when your first answer was given.
Right. So we go by our bid abstracts.
And for the bid abstract, do you look to see whether or not the OPA in the previous decision with G4S said that the license wasn't and could be provided at a later date? And
yes,
I know
sir.
That we're all taught at the procurement modules that licenses can be a responsible thing that just added later. Do you guys take into account whether or not it's a pro forma license or a specialty license?
No, sir. If it wasn't a requirement.
I know, but in putting together your IFB, do you guys stop to think about whether or not does this just require a revenue and taxation license and a C-13 license, or does this require a revenue and taxation license plus a specialty license like a 68 or something else, or an attorney has to be barred on Guam, and whether or not it's possible that person's going to pass the exam? Do you look at that as a possible differentiation between just a regular license at revenue and taxation, of just saying I at 111 Senator Street and this is my office and these are my offices. This is my if it needs a specialty license, do you stop and try to figure out whether or not that's going to be a problem in getting, and would that hold up your procurement?
It would. But myself and along with the end users, it's because it's their specialty, they would most likely be the ones to let us know that there's a specialty license.
And you don't remember whether you guys didn't put a specialty license requirement in this one, right?
I don't recall, sir. It's just...
Do you have any... Did you guys have any discussions as to... I just wanted to clarify that one answer. I'll allow for another round of questions as a result of my question, and you can do your redirect.
Thank you, Mr. O'Keefe. I just have a few follow-up questions. If we can go back to the IFB, and if we could just start at G21. Mr. Chavez, I think you testified earlier that you have had experience in the past where protesters try to, I guess, build in additional criteria after the fact, correct?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. But if you turn to G21, 3.2.2 determination of responsibility. This is part of the IFP, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
You said 3.2.2?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, and 3.2.5, that's also part of the IFP, correct?
Yes.
On G24, 4.1, reference to laws and regulations, that's part of the IFP, correct?
Which one, ma'am?
4.1?
Yes.
And 4.3, laws to be observed, that's also part of the IFP, correct?
Yes, it is.
Okay, 4.4, license to conduct business on Guam, policy of local procurement, that's also part of the IFP, correct?
Yes.
Okay. If we can now turn to, or start, if we can talk about subcontractors, which you had testified about earlier. The only provision... I guess in the IFB packet that refers to subcontractors as an example contract that was provided by GDOE to the bidders, correct? And that's identified on The provision covering subcontractors is on G133. Provision 13, assignment subcontractors. Do you see that?
Yes.
Okay, so that's this provision is why GDO is taking the position that it can have subcontractors for this IFB, correct?
Yes.
Okay, but The sample contract specifically states that the contractor is solely responsible for the fulfillment of its duties and obligations, correct?
Yes.
And that GDOE still has to, I believe that they have to give consent for these subcontractors, correct?
Yes.
Okay. So let's talk about the subcontractors in terms of, with respect to evaluation. If a subcontractor is not identified in a bid, then how is GDOE going to do an evaluation of that subcontractor? They can't, right? Because they don't know who that subcontractor is.
If I'm not mistaken, ma'am, this contract is solely on the responsibility of the contractor itself. It's the responsibility of the contractor and the subcontractor.
Okay. So when you do your evaluation, you don't look at the subcontractors that
it's
are identified?
Based off
in the
of the bid submission.
So you don't evaluate the subcontractors?
Because the agreement is between ourselves and the contractor.
Okay. And it's your, based on the sample contract, it's the primary responsibility of the contractor to perform the work, correct?
From my understanding, yes, ma'am.
Okay, because that's the entity that's going to be entering into the contract with the procuring agency, correct?
It's our contractor.
Okay.
The agreement is between ourselves and the contractor.
Okay. And so when GDOE did its evaluation, if we can go back to the IFD G016, and if we look at 3.1.3.1, phase one evaluation of unpriced technical offers.
Yes, ma'am.
And it has A, B, and C on that page.
Mm-hmm.
So when GDOE was evaluating the bid submissions with respect to TFT, it did not consider any subcontractors that were identified in its bid or were not identified in its bid, correct?
Yes.
Okay. So when you were about, when the evaluators were providing points to the bidders, where it says the qualification of management and staff relevant to the scope of services for WLAN infrastructure installation and giving them points, 10 points, it wasn't considering any subcontractors when it was doing that evaluation?
No, ma'am.
Okay. And when it was talking about management and staff background experience in WLAN infrastructure system and installation, providing 10 points, again, they weren't evaluating any subcontractors, correct?
That's correct.
Okay, so is it GDOE's position that if a subcontractor has a license to perform the work on WOM, the contractor's license, specifically a specialty license, but they're not performing any work, it's the general contractor that's doing all the work, that would qualify the prime contractor to do the work, even though or qualify them for this bid, even if the subcontractor who holds the license isn't doing any work at all?
It's just based on the submission of the IFB, ma'am.
Okay. Okay, I have no further questions.
If you don't mind, if Ms. Tarpus. So to back up really quick, isn't it true that the Attorney General's office provides direct guidance via email to your department? For example, a procurement circular guidance towards IFBs, RFPs in general.
Yes.
Yes. Okay. So it's true that we do receive actual guidance from the Attorney General's office.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. And then just to go back a little bit into the multi-step, isn't it true that the company that the IFB requires the company profile, past accomplishments, the technical resources, a detailed plan, and tech solution in order to be responsible?
Yes. It's the multi-step. It's
right.
A requirement.
And that scale is on 0 to 100, is that correct?
Yes.
Nice. Okay. So isn't it true that you have to go through each and every one of those in order to be responsible?
Yes.
And then on top of that, they have to sign affidavits, is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. And on top of that, do you not have a buyer's memo and an AG's checklist that you have to review and go through prior to every single bid being responsible and responsive?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. So it's how long approximately do you spend from submission to being responsible and responsive?
roughly on IT multi-step?
A multi-step? It takes a while.
It's a while.
Several days.
Several days, okay.
And especially when you have dealing with a multi-step and multiple vendors, these book folders are put together. It could be 3-4 of them.
Right. So I mean, in general, you also rely on your end users when it comes to the nitty-gritty specifics.
Yes, for the specifications.
But is it true that your general guidance, for example, the responsibility and responsiveness, company, past accomplishments, tech resources, detailed plan,
that's all a part of the evaluation, yes.
Okay.
My apologies.
Clarifying. You said yes and no. Thank you. No further questions there.
Yes, Your Honor. Ma'am, I wanted to ask one more question about this G489. And it's because I just want to be honest. I am worried that we're wasting time unnecessarily in these procurement appeals. And I want to ask about G489. Sorry. Again, that was a PDS question about whether there should be a contractor's licensing board evidence in the bid packet and the bid instruction. So you got a bidder who asks, should there be a CLB license submitted in the bid packet? Why not just say yes or no if we know that the answer is either yes or no from your department? Like, why give this multi-sentence answer that ends with bidders are responsible to be informed and knowledgeable? Why not just say yes, you need a CLB license, or no, you don't need a CLB license, or yes, you need one, you can get it later? Why not give an answer like that?
It would just be at the discretion of the bidder who submits.
But basically,
that's what it's asking. It's the discretion. It's the responsibility of the bidder who's submitting to provide whatever it is that's necessary.
But if a bidder asks you during the time for questions, is this necessary? Why not just say yes or no? I mean, it's a question. I'm trying to clarify and avoid. I mean, ma'am, your time is probably more valuable than a lot of us here because of what you do, and I really am appreciative of that. But wouldn't you agree with me that your time would be saved today if DOE had simply put either yes or no there? Would you agree with me on that? At least?
Yes or no, but even truthfully, even if we put yes or no, we would be in the same predicament as we are here today.
Okay.
Yes or no, we would still be in the same predicament
as
we're facing today here in OPA. It doesn't matter how we answer the question. If we put yes or no, someone's not going to be happy with what our decision is, and we're going to be sitting here before the OPA for the OPA to assist us on making the decision under this IFP or any other IFP or any RFP. It doesn't matter, yes or no, a vendor is going to be unhappy with what our answer is, and we're going to be sitting here before the OPA. A yes or no, it doesn't matter. I'm going to just be honest. Yes or no.
Then would you agree with me then if that's your agency's position on procurements, that asking questions seems to be pretty irrelevant?
The question was answered. It wasn't a yes, it wasn't a no. It was answered.
You think that's an appropriate procurement practice, Ongwan? To not provide answers to questions?
It's not an appropriate. I'm just saying it's a yes or no, right? You're asking if it's a yes or no. The question was answered.
I'm sorry, ma'am. I'm asking if you would have provided a yes or no, that would that have been helpful here? And I want to make sure you have an opportunity to explain this. Your answer today is that it wouldn't have made a difference.
The answer is there before you. It would be the discretion of the vendor submitting the bid based off our response. And if the yes or no...
I'm going to ask one more time. So I want to make sure you understand the background. This is a protest where a vendor says a contractor's licensing board license is required. and somebody had asked you, your agency, the one that you're ahead of, for procurement purposes, is a contractor's licensing board license required here? And your answer today is, you think providing a yes or no to that would have been bad? Is that what you're saying?
I'm just saying it doesn't matter what the answer would be.
Okay. Thank you, Matt.
And so there, just a couple questions. Sorry, not going to hold you too much longer. You don't work for the Contractors Licensing Board, right?
No, I do not.
You work for GDOE?
Yes, I do.
So if somebody asks you if they need a contractor's license, you're not qualified to make that determination, are you?
No.
So it sounds kind of like GDOE's answer to question 8 was, you're responsible for following the law, so get what licenses you need. Is that basically it?
Yes.
Thank you.
And maybe I'm wondering whether or not the OPA decision in 15 needs to be clarified. Would it help, following up on Mr. Walsh's question, if the OPA in this decision at some point said, henceforth, every IFB has to clearly state the licenses that are required if they are specialty licenses. It's not one of these things of, you know, we don't have that 15 decision that says, you can provide any license later. Would it help if the decision coming out of this case is that henceforth all licenses to be able to do this will be required at the time of bidding, or the bidder has to provide proof that it will be able to get the license immediately upon the award. Would that help?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Thank you. We'll break till 9 tomorrow morning and get your witnesses ready. Decide amongst yourselves who's next. Okay?
We're off the record at 1:03 p.m.
Who's next?